sunshine, shake my hand. Don't win the respect, got a little blue moon in your eyes.
Los Soprano. Broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Fantastic. Why, hello. It is 3 minutes and 38 seconds after the hour of 11 in this the month of June of the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along. It is Monday, and welcome to Day 12. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. That is 503-733-2970. You want to call in with your thoughts and your whatnot. If you want to email us, you can do that as well. It's honestly just this simple, my friends, my chums, my amigos, my compadres, my pals. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com or 503-733-2970. You want to email the rest of the gang, the crew, the cast. It's Sarah@970.am, Tim@970.am, or Scotty J@970.am. Scotty J is here. He is, quote-unquote, screening your calls as we move through today's program. It's 503-733-2970. We'll do introductions and all of that all over around here in just a second. Let me just say this right now, because we got Steve Castamon is going to be coming up at the bottom of the hour, and we always do this. The opening segment always runs so long that it's like 23 minutes after the hour before I ever decide to, before we ever get around to what we actually want to get done in this opening sequence, and then we never have time, and then I get into the bottom of the hour late, and then everything is shoved behind, and then we get into the news hour at like 12:30. So here's what we're going to do. If you've got comments, questions, clarifications, kvetches, or two cents regarding last night's Sopranos finale, we'll take those calls right now. We'll do more later on, because we're going to get Steve Castamon from New York. I think he might actually be in New Jersey today, but I'm unclear about this. No, he's in New York. And regardless, we will talk Sopranos with Steve Castamon at the bottom of the hour. We will talk Sopranos with you. Yes, you. Right now, 503-733-2970. The only reason I'm saying that is because if I push it later, we're never going to get to it. We'll start taking the calls in like 20 minutes, and then we'll have time for like two, and then we'll get a break, and then we'll come back, and then to Steve, and then you'll be in hold for like an hour, and it'll be unsatisfying for all of us. So we'll do some Sopranos calls right now. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Here's what else is coming up later on in today's program, which is assembled in the United States by robots. We'll have CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard from The Hill. She'll be joining us. Again, the aforementioned Steve Kastenbaum joining us at the bottom of the hour from New York City. He will be talking Sopranos. And CNN radio correspondent and living deity Jim Roop will be joining us from Los Angeles to talk about Paris Hilton, who, if X-17 is to be believed, might be stabbed today, which is fantastic. I mean, not that I advocate stabbing. Although I do. I don't have the actual story. It's in this pile somewhere. But X-17 is reporting that they're afraid that she may be shivved. That is to say, shanked. That is to say, dealt with appropriately. In the dining hall, should she be moved back to Linwood, which may or may not happen today. So we'll get to that. What else? CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop will be talking about that today. Peter Carlin will be joining us for the Oregonian. And here's the thing, and I'm laying you even odds right now. Even money. And this, we're only, what, it's like 5 minutes into today's program. Carlin's not even going to join us till like two. I'm going to say this right now. I have not read his review of last night's Sopranos finale because I figure I was going to a blind. I'm not a very good method actor, so I would just assume not know what he thought about last night's Sopranos, but I'll guarantee you that he liked it. Why? Because all the television critics liked it, because they're required to like it, because they all signed some sort of agreement 9 years ago when the show went on the air that they are incapable of admitting that the Sopranos and David Chase could ever do anything incorrectly. Some sort of... It's like how they all have to praise every John Waters film that comes out. It's just like a rule. So, in any event... Sorry, I'm just all wound up about it. Even now, and maybe that's the sign that it... Maybe I'm just not smart enough. Maybe that's what it is. I got to tell you, my friend Chris Neathen, who is nobody's idea of a fool, and I know I'm leaping ahead of myself here. We haven't even done the introductions yet. But I got to say, our friend Sneathen, who's a bright guy, he, just tracing his emails, it's like counting the rings in a tree. Just looking at his Sopranos-related emails, he's gone back and forth like three, four, five times just in the last, I don't know, 14 hours about the finale. His first... Here's what his first email said. This is about the, I don't know, it was like 7 o'clock last night, because I guess he watched the East Coast feed. His first email just says, F David Chase. F him to hell. And then later on, his email says, disregard my email. Then I get another one saying, effing goddamn David Chase. And I think these are all from him. So, here's what my wife said last night. I wrote this down. I pulled out my Motorola Q and I sent this off to myself because I didn't want to misquote her. So if you watched The Sopranos last night, you know, and Sarah called me last night at around 9:30 to ask me what had happened. And by the way, I should tell you right now that if you haven't seen last night's Sopranos, this is I can't not talk about it. So it's on you to turn down the radio at the appropriate time. You don't want to know what happened. So Sarah called me last night because was your friend Kyle? Some guy?
Yeah, my buddy Kyle.
And so Sarah calls me last night and puts me on the...
No, I called you at 10:02 because then it would be over.
Puts me on the phone with her friend Kyle. And then Kyle, who had not watched the episode because he was out with Sarah, he says to me, what happened? And I said, well, nothing. And he said, no, really, what happened? And I said, no, really, nothing. I said, they bought AJ a BMW and then they had onion rings. And then Tony looked up and then that was the end of the... And they played a Journey song and that was the end of the episode. Hurrah, 8 years of my life. Thanks. Thanks so much for that, David Chase. So this is what my wife said. This is sent from me to me last night because we watched it, except we watched it a little early on the East Coast feed. This is what my wife said last night. This is from last night at 8:53 p.m., immediately after we were done watching it. Quote, this is from my wife now. So the show goes to black last night, and then they roll the closing credits for The Sopranos, and my wife says, quote, B.S., B.S., this is such effing B.S., F this, end quote. So there you go. That's the instant assessment for my wife, also not known as a dumb person. So there you go. Right there. So we'll talk more about that as the show goes on today. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You want to email, you can do that. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Here we go. There's another email. The big letdown, says this email. This is the best they can do after 9 years. 9 years? This is all they can come up with? F this. David Chase is never getting any of my money ever again. F him. There's a lot of variations on the phrase.
Well, because people committed all their, like, 8 years of their lives,
seriously,
right?
And I understand, and I'm just saying, like a year. Here's the other thing about last night's Sopranos, and I don't want to start all negative about it. I know it's a great show, and I know it's one of the great works of the Western pop culture for the 20th century, blah, 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 the freaking blah. I mean... Maybe it's secretly great and I'm just not smart enough to understand it. Maybe it's a sign that it is great. Like Susan Reynolds tried to talk to me about it in the hallway this morning and I told her, actually, I made her stop. Because I hadn't processed my thoughts yet and I didn't want to expend all my energy upstairs in my office this morning before I even get a chance to get on the air and talk about it. But she came by and she's like, so, last night's Sopranos. And I said, no, go away. People came by my office all morning trying to talk to me about it, and I shooed them away. I shushed them and sent them away because I felt like I still had to. I had to turn it over in my head. I had to work on. Like Dennis Pitzenberger came by, so Sopranos, and I said, no, go leave. So I'm still kind of. I don't know. It's like when you're missing a tooth or something. Like when a tooth falls out when you're a kid, and it's like you keep poking at the spot where the tooth used to be. I think that's what I'm doing with the Sopranos today. So. All right. Anyway, I'm just gonna stop, and I'm going to set things up before we go any further. So, yeah, we will talk to CNN Radio correspondent Steve Kastenbaum about the Sopranos finale. CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard on the way. Jim Roop from Los Angeles. Peter Carlin for the Oregonian. We will find out about Paris Hilton and the Shiv danger. What else? We'll discuss people whose lives are worse than your own. And another movie franchise ruined. Ruined? Goddamn ruined. Like everything is recently. That's what we got coming up. Later on, Scotty J as well. We may or may not be rolling out of top five if we have time for it. And just a big pile of stuff. Just a big pile of things that weren't gotten to on Friday. I went home on Friday and I felt like I needed to sleep for about a year and a half. I mean, it was just the most draining, exhausting day. For some of us, anyway. Some of us were on vacation, though, and don't feel drained or exhausted at all because of Friday.
Just a moment. I very seldom take days off. And the one day I take off, I pick the wrong
day. Oh, man. No,
I will regret it forever. I am so sorry I took Friday off.
And
it's too late to take it back, so therefore, we're going to rerun some of the sound bites that I missed on Friday because I don't want to be left out.
Fantastic. So we will just, it will be method acting day. We will just act as though it is still Friday.
Everyone wants to relive Friday over and over again.
No, it's true. I was just saying, after Friday, they should have just put us in the deep freeze right next to, the Walt Disney. Just cryogenically preserved us somewhere right next to, what's his name? Who's that baseball guy? Ted Turner? No.
Well,
whatever. Anyway, we're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Do you have a hole in your armpit? No. Other arm.
Oh, yes. This is an old sweater.
Okay. Just checking. All right. Sure. Borrowing clothes from Clyde?
No, it's really thin fabric, and it snags easily. So.
No, I understand. Either that or you just got really noxious armpit excretions.
Okay.
I'm just saying. No, you like...
I have it on my elbow.
You were stretching at some point, and there was just a big, armpit hole right there. It's all right. I understand.
You have a way of wording things that makes them sound really disgusting.
I'm not trying to make... I was just saying you lifted up your arm, and there was a big hole in the armpit. I'm just saying that's a thing that... Normally, I associate that with a big pizza-stained Roswell shirt. That's all I'm saying. All right. So you did not watch last night. Well, you haven't watched a lot of this season, right? Because you don't have cable where you're living right now.
Mm-mm.
I thought that boyfriend of yours was going to get you cable.
Yeah. I don't really know if I desire cable right now, especially since it's going to be summer. I don't spend a lot of time hanging out at home.
Right.
And I watch a lot of DVDs.
Yeah, no, it's true. And this is the other thing. And I hate to keep going back to The Sopranos before we've even done the actual show introduction. But moments after, as soon as she was done saying, BS, BS, this is effing BS, F them, last night, my wife immediately said, so, let's cancel our cable, shall we? Because Entourage is going to be coming back in a couple weeks, but I'm at the point where I feel like I can pull most of that stuff on the internet. I don't even know how much my cable costs me. I think it's like $100 a month.
The price is
gone. Yeah, I just ignored it because there's nothing you can do about it.
To me, cable is like gas prices. There's nothing I can do to make it cheaper. Mm-hmm. So it's like, as long as I got it, I don't worry about how much it costs me. But I do wonder if maybe I'm at the point where I really ought to just be cutting at the middleman and just pulling crap off the internet. You know what I mean? All right. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Somebody's been eating Charleston chews on my button pad. I found the empty box in my recycle bin, and there was chocolate between these buttons.
Really?
Yes.
You know, and here's the thing. We don't sell Charleston chews in the vending machine in the kitchen, so that means somebody actually brought in a supply of chocolate with them, probably on Saturday.
Box of Charleston. I'll put it right here. Look.
Would you like? Oh, it's amazing.
That is the biggest box I've ever seen.
So there's chocolate from Charleston chews between my cough on and on box.
This is a quarter pound. This is a quarter pound of Charleston chews that somebody brought in.
And I was gone. People just cannot be trusted to follow the rules.
And, why did I feel compelled to sniff the inside of the box just now?
That's been in the garbage.
This wasn't on Friday either. You know this was over the weekend. And, again, we don't sell these in the kitchen. So somebody actually felt like they couldn't get through an airshift here without bringing in this box of Charleston chews.
Mm-hmm.
God damn. How many calories do you suppose is in this box of Charleston chews?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Hundreds. Like 980.
Well, I'm sure the person who chewed those Charleston chews is probably way over the quantity of calories that they should be consuming in the first place.
I don't know. That's just speculation.
Not that it matters.
I have no way of
where they may live.
I have no way of knowing. All right.
Not everyone can be shapely and healthy.
All right.
Oh, some of the other things going on today. We're going to have the conversation, at least parts of it, between Paris and Barbara Walters from prison on the phone.
Fantastic.
We need to attack Iraq, says Joe Lieberman. And we're going to stay in Iraq for decades. Whether you like it or not, says John McCain, who's decided that for you. Two teen girls claim they were kicked off a TriMet bus for kissing. North Bend science students find their toilet water is cleaner than their drinking water. I think they did that last year, too. And a bridge built by a blind man collapses.
Is that from Doyle Redland?
All right. That is a true fact.
Excellent.
A bridge built by a blind man leads passengers into the river.
All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Rick, this email says, I have the feeling you're going to trash the Sopranos finale. You are wrong, 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 it says. It was fantastic.
Really?
The tension of that last scene was incredible, says, what's his name? Some guy. What else do we have here? Rick, the message from last night's Sopranos finale is that it's not over. Can you say movie franchise and spinoff? What else? Rick, here's another one. Rick, I think we're being set up for a blockbuster Sopranos movie, probably directed by Michael Mann, says George. That's the thing about last night is... I don't even know how to get into this without describing it. So... We'll take calls, we'll get emails, we'll do all of this, and again, at the bottom of the hour, Steve Castamom is going to join us, and he'll talk about the fan reaction. I will say this, that the first news story I saw last night on Google News, as soon as the surprise, because I 1-6 o'clock hit last night, because that's when the East Coast feed comes down, that's when it hits our TiVo here in Portland. When 6 o'clock came, I stopped answering the phone. I got text messages. I did not check. I didn't look at them. And I didn't go on the internet. I didn't turn on the television. I didn't do anything. I gave myself a self-imposed media blackout starting at 6 p.m. because I didn't want to know anything about The Sopranos or how it ended. I figured there would be some shocking whatever. So I didn't know anything about it. So I will say this. So I'll give you a brief recap of last night's Sopranos finale if you didn't watch it. If you don't want to hear it, this is when you tune out. Here's all the stuff that people care about. So last night, let's see, what are the high points of yesterday, of last night's episode? AJ is an idiot, and he parks his SUV on top of some dry leaves. His SUV catches fire and blows up without him in it. So his parents buy him a brand new BMW. Because, you know, why not? Phil Leotardo finally gets clipped. That was that. Pauly agrees to start running some of Ralph Cifaretto's old crew. And I guess that was it. I mean, Tony goes to visit Silvio in the hospital, you know, who's just sort of, he's in a coma or whatever. And then at the end, it ends with Tony and his family sitting in a restaurant. Meadow's out front trying to parallel park. She's having difficulty doing so. Meanwhile, Tony and AJ and Carmella are sitting in the restaurant. They're having onion rings. They're building up this whole finale as the, and if you saw it last night, you know what I'm talking about. They spend the last 5 minutes of the episode with Tony and Carmella and AJ sitting in a restaurant. Meanwhile, they keep cutting back to Meadow out front, who's having difficulty parking. She can't find a parking space, and it seems like a goddamn eternity spent on Meadow having difficulty finding a place to park. They show all of these sort of nefarious characters hanging out at the restaurant. There's a guy at the bar who looks a little squirrely. There's some young hoodlum types who are at the jukebox who look a little nutty. And, you know, there's this whole air of menace in the air. And it feels for all the world like they're building up to something really sensational. It feels like they're building up to some fantastic finale. Somebody's going to get whacked. There's going to be a fight. There's going to be a beatdown. Something's going to happen. They're cutting back to the guy at the counter. He's looking around all shifty-eyed. There's the guys at the jukebox who keep looking at Tony. Tony's distracted by the onion rings. Meadow's out front trying to park. And meanwhile, Don't Stop Believing by Journey is playing on the jukebox, and it's getting louder and louder and louder and louder. Then they cut to Meadow, and she's finally walking in the front door, and then the guy at the counter goes into the bathroom, and then the hoodlums turn, and it looks like they're walking by Tony, and then Tony looks up at the camera, and then it just goes to black for like 9 seconds, and then the credits roll. The end. So there's a whole lot of nothing. It's a whole lot of big F you from David Chase. That's what it is. It's a whole lot of why don't you suck it, Rick Emerson. That's what it was from David Chase.
But come on, I didn't watch this, but those last 5 minutes of Sopranos, were they probably the most intense 5 minutes that show's ever had? Because you don't know what's going to happen. It seems like it's building up to something. I mean, it might have screwed you in the end, but at least that part leading up to it was really cool.
Well, that's retarded logic. That's like saying that some girl's flirting with me to the bar and then goes home with some other guy. It's worth it because she was flirting with me.
Well, during the time she was flirting with you, I'm sure you were very happy.
Why did she waste my time if she wasn't going to go home with me? Why did David Chase waste my time if nothing was going to happen last night? And you know what's happening right now? And I will tell you this. All over the interwebs, and I'm talking to you, Chris Nathan, you know what's happening all over the net? People are retconning this. They are doing all of this sort of retroactive... there's all of this retroactive justification going on for last night, where they are trying to make the end of last night's episode something more than what it was. And the end of last night's episode was just a big tease. It was just a big tease, and then there was no payoff. It was David Chase just ran out of ideas. He had nowhere to go. He wrote himself into a corner for about a season and a half. I don't mean to sound so relentlessly negative about it, but goddamn, it was disappointing. I mean, I've spent almost a decade of my life following that show. And, you know, I'm all for building something. I'm all for intrigue. I'm all for whatever. And I'm not saying everything has to be wrapped up with a nice, tidy red bow. I'm not saying that at all. There is such a thing as a satisfying resolution. And if you're going to have an unsatisfying resolution, there is a little bit more of a stylish way to do it than ripping off Boogie Nights for 5 minutes and then cutting to the credits, which is exactly what the end of that sequence was, by the way. That whole where there's tension rising and there's guys in a room and you think there's going to be gunfire, meanwhile an 80s power ballad is playing. I mean, that was done like a decade ago in that sequence in the Hollywood Hills where Sister Christian is playing. I mean, it was like 5 minutes of Paul Thomas Anderson and then, hey, by the way, we're done. Watch this new series we're launching. So, F that. F that with a thing. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, Rick.
Hi.
Yeah, I think you got it wrong. Considering the fact that the show is always about Tony's point of view, and you never hear the bullet that kills you. Tony died. Guy stepped behind him. Screen goes black. Music stops abruptly. That's it.
People are saying that. People are saying that, well, that's because the show is from Tony's point of view, and so Tony's dead.
Yes.
Well, if that's the... Well, first of all, how do you know that?
The show is always about Tony's point of view.
Well, I don't know that that's true. See, people say that, well, the entire show was from Tony's point of view, but that's clearly not true. There have been vast sections of that program in which Tony never appears. Things happen that Tony doesn't see.
Yes,
and at no point have they ever established that the entire series is from Tony's point of view.
Yes, but you never hear the one that kills you.
Yeah,
that's what happened. You saw what happened to Tony. It went black. And the music stopped. What in the middle of a sentence?
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What evidence do you have, apart from one line like a month ago, that this is where they were talking to Bobby about the, you never hear the one that kills you. What evidence do you have that Tony's dead?
No evidence whatsoever.
That's
except the fact
saying.
That a good director would have done it that way.
A good director. All right. I'm just... I mean...
It's consistent with the show is what I'm saying.
It's not consistent with... All right. How is it consistent with the program?
Because the show is always about Tony trying to maintain a normal life in the midst of everything that was going on, pretending that he could do so. Even the last episode was everybody pretending that they could go on. The daughter becomes a lawyer for all the wrong reasons. The son is superficial. The wife is brutal to put up with it. And Tony thinks that he can go on.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Even supposing that your take on it, and a lot of people are saying this morning, I know what's his name, Colin Coward was saying this morning, he said, well, the entire thing is from Tony's point of view and Tony gets whacked. I mean, I still find that to be a little bit of BS because Tony's whole thing is that he is hypervigilant. He's a survivor. And they lay out that, you know, when they're in that restaurant last night, they're in that cafe, and... I mean, the entire, it's like the cafe is just filled with a cast of Casablanca. I mean, everybody looks like a thug. Everybody looks like a bad guy. The guy at the camera is all shifty-eyed and keeps turning to stare at Tony and then walks right by him to the bathroom, which is a scene straight out of The Godfather. We all notice that, and yet Tony's somehow supposed to be oblivious to that. If Tony did get clipped at the end of last night's episode, I also kind of don't buy that because it was painted in such broad colors. I can't believe Tony wouldn't have noticed that guy. I mean, the guy was the very definition of suspicious.
Yeah, but Tony was at his height of being of fooling himself at that point. He thought he had it all together, his family together. He's finally reached the normalcy he wanted, and that's what he fooled himself.
Mm. All right. Well, I don't like it. No, sir.
Okay.
I don't like it. Thank you.
Goodbye.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon.
What's up?
Sarah had it right, though. just you describing what happened in that last scene got me going again.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. My description of it makes it sound way better than it really is. You know what
I
mean?
No, because I'm watching it with my kids last night, and we were standing. We're all sitting there going, oh, my God, what is it? What is going to happen? We were standing. We were no longer sitting. We were all tensed in there trying to figure it out. And the fact that the guy went into the bathroom, yeah, you're thinking to yourself, okay, he's going to go get it. But when Tony looked up, he didn't turn to where the bathroom was. He was looking at the front door. It set you off in totally different areas.
Well, now I don't even know what you're saying. So he looked...
When it was the last scene before it went black.
I know. He looks up because he sees Meadow walking in the front door.
Is that what he saw? We saw Meadow coming to the door, but we never saw her go in. He looks up towards the door. He's not looking at the bathroom anymore, which is what Chase was trying to get out. That, you know, here's the Godfather scene. The guy's going to go to the bathroom, but Tony's not even looking that way.
So let me understand this. So I'm paying $100 a month for cable, and I've got to create the end of the show myself?
Yes, sir.
What the hell am I paying David Chase for? Fat bastard, why doesn't he finish the show for me? Why do I have to do it?
Well, if it means anything, maybe you'll get residuals later on.
All right, that's funny. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson's show. Hello. Hello, yes, hello? Hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm sorry. As far as that being the end of the show because Tony got shot, you wouldn't see the shot that kills you, but the last thing that you would know would be that you would hear a pop. You would hear a pop, and then you would die. It's not like you would instantaneously die. The last thing you would hear would be this pop.
And there was no pop, by the way. It just the song ended, and it went to black or whatever.
Right, but I mean, in there someplace, you would have heard, if you were Tony Soprano and somebody put a gun to the back of your head and pulled the trigger, you would hear the pop.
So you don't believe he's dead?
Well, I just don't think that it would play out that way. I think in the real world, if you were sitting someplace and you know, you would hear a shot, and you would die in an instant, but you would hear the shot.
And let me also say this. Is it me, or did none of those guys in the restaurant, I mean, none of them were familiar at all. Is that none of them were from Phil Leotardo's crew, to the best of our knowledge? I don't think anybody, I don't think we'd ever seen any of them before.
Well, I haven't actually even seen the show. I've seen like three episodes, so I'm going to watch the whole thing on video, DVD. So, don't tell me what happens, but...
Yeah, all right, yeah. Thank you.
Also, by the way, yeah. I sent you an email about Tim's chair.
Oh, about Tim Riley's chair.
Yeah, to keep it from getting, keep his computer from getting gummed up.
What does the email say, sir?
Basically, you bolt Tim's chair to the floor and hook a scale to it that cancels out the computer or anything over 160 pounds.
if anybody more than 180 tries to sit in the chair, nothing works. All right.
You see it? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
All right. All right, this is... Oh, my God, it's 11:30 already. Are you serious? We're half an hour into the program? I think I fell into some sort of Stephen Hawking wormhole. What should we do, Sarah? Tell me.
Well, Mr. Steve Kastenbaum's already here, so we should probably go to him.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, live from New York City. CNN radio correspondent and man of the world, Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm embittered and feeling used. It's okay.
A lot of us are after watching that episode last.
That's what I'm saying. And the lines are already full of people who want to call up and either agree with me or disagree with me. But let me ask you this right now. Do you give last night's the big thumbs up, or do you give it the big F you thumbs down?
You know, I was watching the episode with a bunch of people at a viewing party at an Italian restaurant on Mulberry Street in Little Italy.
Uh-huh.
And the reaction at the moment that the screen went black, and first off was, what happened? What went wrong?
Yeah, I thought I paid the cable bill.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And the second reaction was, that's it?
Yeah.
That's it? What?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, at the moment, I felt gypped. But then when I had an opportunity to think about it a little bit, I felt like, you know, David Chase, actually, that was the best way for him to end the show. Like, if he lets Tony Soprano get totally off the hook and scot-free, then there's all the speculation, oh, it isn't over, there's going to be a movie, you know, what's the deal, you know. And then if he got whacked, then everybody would be upset that he killed off. He couldn't kill off his favorite character. I mean, you know, David Chase has poured his heart into this guy. So I didn't think that was going to happen either. And to have him arrested by the feds, that would have been a real downer, you know?
I guess. I mean, I guess my whole thing is, A... nothing has ever stopped David Chase from having a downer ending before. I mean, think about the many hundreds of horrific acts of violence we have witnessed on this program. It's not like they're somehow chained to having a little golden book happy ending all the time.
Right.
And you know what? And last night's black screen ending hasn't really stopped everybody from speculating that he's going to do a feature film deal anyway. I mean, people are already... Here's what I'm hearing. People are speculating that it's going to be a feature film, that the, quote, real ending will only be available on the DVD set. I mean, that it was just there, so they'll get a lot of repeat viewing on the rerun of this. I mean...
Well, the scuttlebutt is that they tape three different endings for this.
Right.
So that, you know, you wouldn't be able to leak out what the real ending was, because nobody knew except for a few editors and Dave, you know, what was going to be the real ending. So I would suspect that's definitely going to be the case. They'll release the box set with all three endings, and you could choose which one you like better. As far as the movie, though, I don't know. I mean, like, Gandolfini doesn't even like talking about The Sopranos anymore.
Oh, he's clearly so done with that.
Yeah. So I think, you know... He and Edie Falco, you know, they want to move on to other things. They want to expand their acting careers. You know, James Gandolfini, he was in some other things that weren't mafia-related prior to The Sopranos. And so, you know, to be typecast like this, he's going to have a hard time getting out of this bubble.
Yeah, well, and even the things he did that weren't mob-related as such were all kind of variations on a theme. I mean, like when he was in 8mm, you know, he was and in True Romance, I mean, he's always played a thug. Not always, but usually played a thug, even before he was on The Sopranos.
Even the submarine movie, what was that one again, where he's... Denzel Washington is...
Oh, Crimson Tide.
Crimson Tide, yeah. Played an officer in that.
And The Last Castle with whoever the hell was in that, you know, came out a couple years ago, and I mean, he was a thug in that movie too. So,
right.
I mean, he's just not a guy. He is, pardon the pun, he is a heavy. I mean, he's not a guy who necessarily plays a conventional hero, nor do I think he ever could be. I mean, unfortunately, there's sort of a gene splicing that's gone on where James Gandolfini is Tony Soprano.
Yeah, and there was one movie where he played, I think it was a colonel, was in charge of a military prison.
Yeah, that was The Last Castle. Yeah.
Oh, that's the one? Yeah. Oh, man, I had to turn that one off.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
Yeah. So, the guy who owns the restaurant that I watched The Sopranos in last night actually, you know, had a semi-recurring role in The Sopranos. His name is John Sciarchia.
Mm-hmm.
He played Albi in the other...
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, he was watching the episode, and... He had no idea how it was going to end, and he had this take on it.
I thought he was going to, his whole family was going to get wiped out in the diner by the guy that went to the bathroom.
And then it goes to black and nothing.
Nothing.
He was disappointed as well.
I do, but I will note this, that apparently, again, because they are legally obligated to do so, all of the intelligentsia today, all of the television critics are just wetting themselves all over it about how genius it is and how brilliant it is. And I think there's a concerted effort on behalf of critics to convince themselves that it's somehow fantastic.
Well, there have been some that have panned this, who said they felt like they've been had. There are a few out there that I was reading, you know, on the Associated Press that some of the major newspaper guys were really upset with the way it ended. So I think it goes either way. But yeah, I at that moment I really felt like I had been taken for a ride, and he got the better of us. I felt like a fool. I was like, oh, man, I invested so much time in this, and that's how it ends.
Well, that's what my wife said was. She was like, you know, I give 9 years of my life for this program, and they can't... It's not that it was like... Objectively speaking, in a vacuum, it's not like it's the worst ending to a television series ever. But I mean, for a show of this magnitude, and when you look at the fact that they had a year and a half to write this finale, let me tell you this.
Right.
Let me just say this. Aaron Sorkin writes episodes in a week. Trey Parker from South Park writes episodes in a day. They had a year and a half to write this, and that's the best they could come up with was figure out the ending yourself.
Very good point. I mean,
so.
They could have spent a lot less time on AJ's issues, and
I was very
happy.
Oh, man, and every moment AJ's on the screen last night, I'm just looking at my watch going, come on, there's 13 minutes left. Get to it, you know? Just dwelling on a bunch of, and this is the other thing, speaking of being taken for a ride, and I know I'm officially ranting now, all this time last night, during the episode, dwelling on stuff and wasting our time with things that they knew weren't going to matter in the end.
Right.
I feel, last night's episode to me feels a little bit like, The Blair Witch Project, in that the rewatch value is effectively nothing because they're spending all this time on crap that you know in the end doesn't matter. It's all about the final 4 minutes and everything. Try to watch last night's episode and care about anything that unfolds. You can't because you know already that it doesn't matter. None of it matters.
It would have been different if they were still stringing us along for next year's, you know, season and all that. But you're right, yeah. They could have made this one power-packed hour
of an
incredible mob war, plus pulling in this other aspect of the possibility of Tony, you know, having to go on trial. You know, it all could have really been really tense and intense for an hour. Instead, it wasn't.
No. All right.
Yeah, I'm going to be interviewing Little Steven, a.k.a. Steven Van Zandt, a.k.a. Phil Silvio, in a little bit. Is there anything you want me to ask him?
Ask him, you know, I really don't. Ask him if, no, I have nothing.
I want to ask him how he felt that, you know, for the final episode, he wasn't there at all because he was in a coma.
He was in a coma. I'm just fascinated with that hair that he has. That's all I really care about.
That's some wig, huh?
Yeah. All right. Steve Castamon, we're going to go Steve in our own bitterness here. So enjoy the rest of your New York afternoon, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Steve Castamon in New York City. All right. We got a break. We're so behind. We come back. We'll get Jim. Come on, Jim. Hang on. We'll get to Jim here in a second. Godlike former program director Bruce Agler weighs in on last night's Sopranos finale and so forth. It's 503-733-2970. You stay there. The Rick Emerson Show continues. Don't go anywhere.
Break.
I'm not going to quit bitching about
it. The past 40 minutes
and
of the
you
show.
Know, and God love him, but you know the Peter Carlin's, I was just telling you, sir, you know Peter Carlin's take on it is essentially going to be, Rick, you're a moron. Quit your bitching. That's exactly what Peter Carlin's take will be. 503-733-2970.
But you're guessing because you haven't read his thing, so maybe he hated it as well.
Maybe. Probably not. I was just telling Sarah, not to be, you know, relentlessly lowbrow. I was just telling Sarah. And see, the thing is, and I have to say, I will make a blanket statement here at the beginning. I will say this: that it's not as though I'm not going to respect people who like the ending last night. I mean, if you like last night's Sopranos finale, that's fine. I mean, I'll still respect you as a person. I just won't understand it. That's my whole thing. I won't understand why you like it. And I think it comes down to what kind of television viewer you are. Now, I will say, Joni and I have these arguments all the time because I am a very linear person, and I am a very left-brained person in most ways. And I don't like things typically. I guess, again, I keep going back to, I think I'm just not smart enough. I don't like things that are surrealistic. I don't like things that are deliberately otherworldly or ambiguous. This is why I have such a difficulty with David Lynch films. What is this, Mulholland Falls or Drive?
Mulholland Drive. As soon as you were saying that, I was thinking about Twin Peaks in the last episode of that.
I would rather pound nails into my own scrotum than watch those movies and try to make sense of them. And
the finale of Twin Peaks still makes me so mad. I can't rewatch it. I watched it once and I can never watch it again.
That's what I'm saying. And I will. And before somebody calls up and starts running their mouth about St. Elsewhere, let me just say this. St. Elsewhere had one of the greatest endings of all time because, in a sense, it was sort of otherworldly, but it was at the same time, it was very linear. Do you know the finale to St. Elsewhere? Widely considered the greatest TV finale of all time. St. Elsewhere runs for whatever it was, 7, 8, 9 years. By the way, still, for me, the greatest TV series of all time, St. Elsewhere. For my money. I'm just saying for me now. The greatest TV series ever. It's a hospital in Boston, blah, 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 blah. You know, kind of the ER of its day. Whatever. It runs for 8 years. And then the final shot is of this actor, Bruce Greenwood, looking out. He's just been told he has HIV, and he's thinking, being all thoughtful, and he's looking out the window of the hospital, and he's thinking, like, oh, what am I going to do now? And then they cut to the outside of the hospital, and you see Bruce Greenwood looking out the window. And then it does this long pullback from St. Eligius, from the hospital, this long pullback. And then there's a weird cut. And to make a long story short, they do a long pullback, and then there's a weird cut to a snow globe, and you realize the entire series was an autistic boy's daydream. Which you can say is very surreal, but on the other hand, it's not surreal. Like, it's not dreamlike. It makes perfect sense. It's weird, and it's out of left field, but again, it's still a very concrete, finite way to end it. It was all a daydream in the head of this autistic boy. Now, you don't see it coming, but it's not superstitious or magical or weird. It's very linear, but at the same time, something you didn't see coming. As opposed to certain series that ends and, you know, and I haven't seen the Twin Peaks finale for so long.
Oh, my God.
Where it's just like nothing makes sense. Like, The autistic boy daydream thing, you don't see it coming, but at least it makes sense and it's logical in its own sort of way. There are series that just end where nothing makes sense at all.
Well, I don't want to ruin it if anyone's seen it, but I mean, they end up by killing a bunch of people that you that are the favorite characters and then doing something at the end that's so horrendous. I was just so furious that I had spent, you know, 2 months of my life watching these, you know, episodes consecutively, and then it ends like that. So I can see your frustration with The Sopranos.
Just made me so angry. All right. Well, we'll get these calls, and then we got a break again. Wait, hold on. Where the hell did I,
What in the hell?
Okay, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show.
K-O-T-K!
Our godlike former program director, Bruce Ackler. Hello, sir.
Good morning.
Hi.
Calm down now. Just
I'm doing my best.
Calm down. And I want to get to the blackout in just a second, but first I just wanted to say overall, I actually thought it was a pretty good episode. I wouldn't give it an A, but I would give it about a B. Because the theme of the episode all the way through was about life goes on. And the reason I don't give it an A is because that's kind of where I thought he was going to go.
I figured
he can't kill them off. It's like she was just talking about with Twin Peaks, right? You don't want to see all the characters you love get killed off, right?
People keep saying that you can't kill them off, but I don't see why not. I mean, I don't understand why not. That's the whole thing about that show is, like, nobody's safe, right?
Well, I mean, and again, that's, well, and exactly. You bring up a point that I didn't realize until this morning, and I got first off, the episode was genius from one standpoint. I didn't realize it until this morning how much genius, because think of how much you've already talked about it. You do 4 hours on this if you
want. Oh, I know. I understand.
I mean, the Howard Stern show, they spent an hour and a half on it. A radio host in another Northwest market that I have to listen to from time to time, who normally never talks about anything except local stuff with the police department in his town. That's all that they were talking about on that show this morning.
It is buzzworthy.
Yeah, it turns out this was by far the most genius thing, because look, instead of 1 hour last night, this is going to be 24 hours
today. I know.
And not just on HBO, but on every possible media outlet one can conceive. Front page of the New York Times this morning, for Lord's sake. So, I mean, think about it all that way. Now, you just said something, and I heard somebody else this morning say this, and I have no idea if this is where Chase was really going. But when it comes to the blackout, because last night even myself with the blackout, I had a difficult time kind of understanding it. But I even kind of thought, well, that seemed satisfying, because if the theme was life goes on, then that's it. You know, boom, everybody, you know, they're just, life goes on, right? And then how else you going to end it? You just cut it off. But then I heard something this morning that I thought was perhaps genius. You know, you had that one caller who said the reason it just blacks out is because Tony did get shot.
Sure.
And because there was an episode way early in the show.
When you were talking with Bobby Bacala.
Well, no, I mean, seasons ago with Pussy, I think it was, where he's talking about you'll never hear the final shot.
Oh, right.
And as opposed to the guy who said you're going to hear the pop, there was the Tony himself that said one time you'll never hear the final shot.
Right, right.
But now think about this. Tony wasn't killed, and because who was it through that whole final scene that was so nervous and so on edge and looking at every person in the room? It wasn't any of the Sopranos. It was us.
Right.
So who is it who didn't hear the final shot? Who is it who got killed, got whacked in the final scene?
I don't even know what we're...
It's us, the viewer. It's you.
Okay, that's interesting.
See? I heard somebody say that this morning on one of the shows I was listening to, you know, and I think that's exactly what Chase was about. The show wasn't from Tony's point of view, like some people have said. This show was always from our point of view, right? You, me, so on. We watch this show the whole time, and then what happens in the end, he makes us so nervous, we're so looking around to see where's the shot going to come from. We never know, because that shot got us.
I suppose.
He killed us off at the end, and they all go on, and that's why all the other mundane stuff about... with AJ and about how the trial is going to happen, and the trial isn't even going to be some big deal. It's just, you know, it's going to be about the gun charge. I mean, everything was so mundane. Everything in that last episode was so mundane, except for the whacking of Phil. Everything else in that show was just so mundane, and that's it, because we're the ones that got shot.
I suppose.
Now, I mean, I'm not a mind reader. I have no idea. And I haven't heard from David Chase, so I have no idea if there's any validity to that.
Well,
but I do think that was a particularly interesting explanation, and I do kind of like that one.
I suppose. I guess it is. The one thing I will agree with you, that it is marketing genius, because everybody is going to be talking about it all day. Yeah,
no doubt about it.
All right, Bruce.
But see, think about that. We didn't hear the final shot. It just went black, and that was it. Our world ended.
Sort of an all quiet on the Western Front kind of a thing. All right. Excellent. There you go. Bruce Agler, ladies and gentlemen, godlike former program director. I know we're behind, but real quickly, some people have been waiting, so I got to get to these. That's Bruce. Let's see. Where else are we going here? Let's get Joe. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. How you doing? This is Joe.
What's up?
I put the stereo in your old Nissan.
Oh, excellent. Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Hey, there's a couple points I wanted to make. One is one of my coworkers listens to satellite radio, and shortly before I left to go to lunch a little while ago here, he was saying that on the station he was listening to, somebody had called in and noticed that all the people in the diner are people that Tony has done wrong to in previous episodes and previous seasons. For instance, the guy that looked like the truck driver over in the corner booth was apparently the guy who Christopher shot in season 1, episode 2, 46 long, when they stole the truck full of suits.
Oh, God, this is becoming a Star Trek convention.
And apparently the guy in the members only jacket was somebody who had played a cousin or something of Phil Leotardo a few seasons ago.
So all the nefarious characters in that diner are from previous episodes, according to
whoever. Apparently, yeah. Another point I wanted to bring up, too, which I don't know, I've never heard anybody else say this, but, you know, for the longest time, I always thought it was going to end with the ducks coming back to the pool.
That's what I thought, too. That's my whole thing was waiting for the ducks to come back. That was now, my whole thing.
Now, have you noticed that in the second half of this final season, which started off when Tony and Carm went up to the lake with Bobby and Janice, every episode since then, there's a point where you either see or hear ducks. Every single one of them.
I hadn't noticed that, but I was watching for it last night. I didn't see it, but no, I didn't notice that.
No, every single episode, and I thought it almost ended that way, because remember right about 3 minutes towards the end last night, he was out in the back raking leaves or something.
Right.
And you could hear the ducks fly overhead at that point.
And that's not an accident either. You know that's in their intention.
Oh, yeah. And every single episode they had remember when Paulie did the lawn job at Christopher's place, and he ran over they zoomed in on that little duck for a while.
Yeah,
the duck flew by up at the lake, and there's other several times, and at least once every episode there was some added duck reference. And I thought they were going to go to that, but you know. And the other point too, I wanted to make real quick, and then I'll let you go to get some other callers. But you have to admit one thing. It absolutely ended in a way that you would never expect.
Well, that is true. No, that is true. I don't think anybody would have predicted that last night. Excellent. There you go. There's a car story of Joe. God bless you, sir. All right. Thank you. And one more here, then we got a break. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. I'm not sure why this finale, Sopranos finale, is so difficult to understand or deconstruct. Just take a big breath and step away from the ledge there. And I don't think Chase is such a particular genius on it, and Bruce actually did steal some of my thought. You know, for me, no sort of clear beginning or ending was ever pointed to at any point in the entire series. Never was there a building up, you know, some sort of definitive end. The show was more or less a decade in the life of this New Jersey mob family. The show was, you know, about, you know, the ebb and flow, ups and downs of a man and his, you know, his life of organized crime, you know, running his business. And here's an interesting point, too. Note that not even his psychotherapy had a point or a conclusion, and nothing over the course of these seasons had any definitive, you know, end game purpose.
Right.
All the events just served themselves. They're for their own point in time individual purpose. And just because, you know, in recent episodes there was some particular heavy bunch of days in Tony's, you know, life, you know, especially with the New York crew bearing down on them, it doesn't mean that some end was in the cooker.
Well,
everybody just assumed that there was.
There's two kinds of series, in my opinion. There is where a series goes from A to Z, and you get to see from A to Z. You get to see from the beginning of a particular saga to the end of the saga. And then
we're inclined to want that, too. I mean, we want things just all...
And then there's the second type of series, which is where, let's say Tony Soprano's life goes from A to Z, and we get to see from, like, D through Q.
Yeah, a little sector. And that's exactly what it was. You know, and Bruce was right, and there is some other commentary, but for me, I was sitting there for the entire episode, and I was saying, okay, either he's going to get whacked or absolutely nothing is going to happen. And that blackness, when that blackness hit me, I was like, exactly, nothing happened. But then I started thinking exactly the same thing as some of the other people were thinking, because it went black, but it wasn't just a black screen, it was no sound. And that's where I myself got the idea, okay, we just got whacked.
Right. Well,
you know, that's
maybe that's David Chase's message to you as a viewer, sir.
Yeah.
In your face, viewer.
Yeah, in my face.
All right, thank you. There you go. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Fear not, we'll be discussing this for hour after hour later on. All right, Tim Riley is back with the AM 970 New News Hour coming your way in just a few minutes. You stay right there. Later on, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian, Lisa Goddard, and James Roop from CNN Radio Los Angeles. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Email says, bitch, please. Please, please do not cancel your cable. I work for Comcast, and you will screw with my profit sharing at the end of the year. You'll be taking thousands of dollars from small Comcast offspring. You don't want to have to ride your bike daily for Comcast children in addition to the retarded, do you? Thanks so much. Yeah, I'll probably keep it just for entourage. It's 503-733-2970. More Sopranos discussion on the way. Ladies and gentlemen, back from his extended three-day tour of Europe, Scandinavia, and the subcontinent, it's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
First, many thanks to Scotty J. I guess it's John and Aaron the Geek, all for filling in on Friday.
Yeah.
All three did a tremendous
three
job.
Three men to do the work of you, Tim Riley.
I'm telling you, I'm very humbled by the whole thing. And I took the worst day in the world to take off, too.
It's true.
I just kicked myself.
We kept saying that all through the day. We're like, Tim isn't here. I could just picture you like in the airport looking at the CNN airport network or whatever the hell it is and just seeing the Paris Hilton drag screaming back to, you know, and just you said just shaking your head. Why, God? Why today
I
all
know.
Day?
That's exactly
why do
I
you
say.
Mock me?
But I want to say hi to all our friends who work for the TSA over at the Portland airport. They're big fans of the show.
Oh, so should I lay off?
Yes, you should.
Wait, are we talking about the security people or
yes,
the baggage handlers?
Both.
Oh.
Awesome. I'm going to
and
the airport
people who search your bags when you put them up and you put your things in that small plastic container, those
guys.
Look at
my plastic baggie full of mini bottles.
No, you don't have to do that anymore. They got rid of that rule even at LAX.
So this is
you just have to put your shoes in and your coat.
So these are the people who will make me take off my crap when I go through. They are listeners?
Yes, they are, and big fans.
And well, you can bring liquids now.
Yes, apparently so. But what I don't understand is, why is it that you have to take off the shoes that you're wearing and put them in the box, but the shoes you packed in your bags can stay in your bag?
Don't go using logic, Tim. Don't you go thinking for yourself.
I know our friends who are fans of the show don't make those rules, but that's what I was wondering.
All right. Hello to our friends at the TSA. How does it feel to be tools of the oppressor? I'm sorry.
Oh, come on.
Was that not what you meant?
No, it was not.
I know.
They're folks trying to make a living.
I know. They're just doing their job. I understand.
And then last night, on my flight back home for the first time ever, there was an emergency aboard the plane. Somebody had a heart attack.
Fantastic. I mean, not fantastic, but
not
I mean,
fantastic.
That's interesting. Did they live? Do you know?
I don't know if they did.
Okay. But
well,
that's interesting anyway.
But I will say that the, they still call stewardesses, the ladies who
the airline attendants.
They were,
flight attendants.
They were cool as cucumbers, no panic. They knew exactly what they were doing. But the thing that panicked me was I heard the bling, and then I hear preparing for medical emergency. And see everybody's face drop.
You're just hearing, you're picturing the TV guy right next to you. just spelling his disease right into the circulatory system.
So luckily for the person, this happened around, about 9:35. We were scheduled to land at 10:30. This was Alaska Air Flight 230 when I was coming back on a flight from L.A. And it was Boeing 737. But luckily, we're on our way to land. They just hurried it up a little bit, and they pulled into a special gate.
How weird, man. I wonder if they have to do... Well, they must know CPR or something.
Yeah.
They must make it a rule that you have to do that.
But I saw one of the name tags on one of the stewardesses was Jennifer, but she was the coolest and calmest of them all.
For a Jennifer.
Yeah, for a Jennifer.
I will say this, that you missed the greatest moment on Friday, not, you know, an off-air moment, which is when Scotty spent about an hour and a half recording his afternoon news, and then he accidentally hit the delete button and erased the
whole thing. Oh, I heard that. That is too bad.
Well, I'll just save this now, and he hit the delete button, and then it's all gone.
But you know what, Scotty? Scotty, just so you don't feel so bad, we've all done the same thing hundreds of times.
Yes.
We're just not telling you that.
No, it's true. We just don't talk about it.
We've destroyed years of our career by doing this. So we've had a lot more to destroy than you have, Scotty.
Oh,
and
man.
We've done it.
Can I just tell you, this is one story, because, again, Scotty spent, because Tim does his afternoon news during Tom Likas, and Scotty thought, well, you know what, I'll just pre-tape it all, and I'll tape it during the show, and that way I have hours to get it done. So he spends about 90 minutes pre-taping the news again, then instead of hitting the copy key, he just hits delete. He erases all of it, and he came in later. Hi, Scotty. How are you? Fine, thanks. You know, just totally on the edge of a nervous collapse. Let me just tell you this.
We've all done it before on days that we had to be somewhere at a particular time.
Absolutely. Here's my worst experience with getting rid of something. This is years ago, and I worked in another market, and there was a client who was like an auto dealer. And they were doing some sort of a bit. It was going to be like for an extended infomercial. This auto dealer had bought a Sunday morning infomercial schedule. So every Sunday there was going to be some infomercial for their new whatever, their new Cadillac or whatever it was. And so the infomercial, though, consisted of the news guy with a little portable tape deck driving around and going on a ride with the dealer. And so here's the auto dealer and here's the news guy riding around town for 25 minutes in the new Cadillac. The whole time the news guy's got the tape recorder. And he's like, so this is so-and-so and I'm riding around town and this brand new. It was really like a tedious, boring commercial. But, I mean, the guy paid for it. So it was effectively a half-hour commercial that just consisted of the news guy giving running commentary on his portable tape deck as he drove around in this Cadillac. He then gives it to me. You can see this coming a mile away. It's on a reel-to-reel. I lay it on a pile with some other reel-to-reels without labeling it. Without labeling it. And then later on, a guy in the other room says, hey, I need some empty reels. Could you just find some that are all spliced up and useless and just give them to me? And I say, sure, fine. So I pick up this reel-to-reel of tape, which I think is like just useless. It's just garbage. And I take out the razor blade, and I just cut it right to the core, and I just toss all the tape and little pieces into the trash, never realizing, at that moment anyway, that I have just cut this infomercial into tiny little pieces of tape and shoved it into the trash. And, I mean, you don't understand. It's not like throwing a cassette away. It's not like throwing a computer file into the recycle bin where you can fetch it. I just took a reel-to-reel of tape and cut it into thousands and thousands of 3-inch pieces and dumped it into the trash, thinking it was garbage because it wasn't labeled. And then later the news guy comes in, so where's that reel-to-reel with that infomercial on it? I said, well, it was just here. And then I realized it's in the trash. And, I mean, it was the lowest moment. It was the lowest moment ever. This is terrible. I mean, there was just, and I don't know how I didn't get fired for that in retrospect. I don't know how I avoided being fired. That's exactly the kind of thing they love to fire people for. So don't feel bad, Scotty. We've all done it.
Yeah, and this job, at one time, there might have been more than just a few people doing it, putting bits and pieces of it together.
Yes.
So there's a lot to it, Scotty. But you did a great job.
Yes.
I want you to do it again soon.
All right. Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's take a break from the Soprano Soup for a Paris Hilton news break.
Fantastic.
Paris Hilton has given her first interview from jail. Barbara Walters spoke to Hilton over the weekend. Walters told the View audience today the hotel heiress said it's time to clean up her act.
I used to act dumb. It was an act, and that act is no longer cute.
Uh-huh.
It is not who I am, nor do I want to be that person for the young girls who looked up to me.
It is. You are aggressively stupid, mm-hmm. and nothing will change that.
This smells like an $80,000 a year PR hack, writing these things.
Yes, it does.
Barbara said Paris told her reports of her first 3 days in jail were incorrect.
She said she was not wailing, sobbing, or screaming, as had been described.
Yes, you were.
But she said, I was not eating or sleeping. I was severely depressed. I felt as if I was in a cage. I was not well.
You were in a cage.
It was a horrible experience.
It felt as if I was in a cage. You're really bright, Paris. Why would that have been?
Jesus. Paris claims she has found God in jail.
She said, I'm 26 years old now, and it is a different time. She said, I have become much more spiritual.
You were 26 last week.
God has given me this new chance.
Whatever.
Now, getting back to this part again.
Okay. No, well, you can continue.
No, you go ahead. I'll get to whatever you haven't gotten to afterwards. So, celebrity journalist Pat LaLama says Paris didn't have a revelation about God. Her PR people did, and they finally intervened.
She's allowing her people, the people she pays lots of money to now sort of control what's going on. That should have been done a long time ago.
So her preferential treatment in the county jail may benefit the women who are there now.
It's brilliant to write the letter saying, I found God, I'm a different person. It sounds great. I hope it's true. But I don't think a few days in jail turns around the person.
No, this is like those you know, the guys who get busted and they always see Jesus at the bottom of the crack vial. You know, that never lasts. Yeah, it's like Daniel Baldwin. Is that Daniel Baldwin? Is he the Jesus one?
No, that's Stephen Baldwin.
Stephen Baldwin. You know he'll be
He's
back
the
on the
Jesus
pipe
Baldwin.
One of these days. It's just a matter of time. All right, so first of all, there's still a smorgasbord of Paris Hilton news. So I heard, I read on TMZ.com. Sources tell me.
It's always true on TMZ.
It is. Gossip is always true. I heard that she was the medical condition was that she was refusing to eat her drink because she didn't want to be photographed sitting on the prison toilet.
That's correct.
Because the prison toilet has, you know, it's not like there's a door there. It's a prison toilet is in full view of a window which leads into the guard station.
Mm-hmm.
And so if she had been sitting on the prison toilet, the guards would have been able to point up a cell phone camera and snap a picture of her sitting on the loo. Mm-hmm. Here's why I don't believe that. Because I'm not a doctor, but even if you don't eat or drink for 3 days, you still got to use the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, you still got liquid.
She might not know that.
I suspect there's a lot she doesn't know. You're 98% liquid. You still got to go. So unless she just went in her pants, which would be great, or just didn't go at all somehow, just managed to hold it through some superhuman effort, I don't put much stock in that story because it seems like she still would have had to use the bathroom at some point.
So it costs 10 times more than the normal rate to jail Paris Hilton. This, according to TMZ, who contacted the Sheriff's Department to determine just how much money the county is spending on Hilton, and it's way more than it costs to stay at a Hilton. The Sheriff's spokesman tells TMZ the average cost per day for a female inmate is $99.64. Well, Paris is no bargain. It costs $1,109.78 to lock her up.
She have to pay for that?
Let's see. The costs include medical treatment and staff associated with her needs. Doesn't say.
I mean, it seems like if you, I always wonder about that. If inmates are required to pay some portion of their own, you know, the cost to incarcerate them.
If she was under house arrest, it would cost zilch.
Mm. All right. So let's see. We've got this. This is from our good friend Siegfried Rick. Check it out. Sounds like the sisters from Shawshank are going to be visiting her. This is from X17. All right. So let's see. She's alone in a room with four beds. She gets two cold meals a day, 7 and 11, and one a hot meal at 6 p.m. She's allowed an hour a day on the phone. She's not on suicide watch, but they do check her every 30 minutes. She has a television in the community room that she has chosen not to visit. Blah, 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 blah. Now, apparently, if all goes well, she'll be transferred back to Linwood, but apparently Linwood doesn't want her. Because, and this is according to X17, they say, they believe the jail is understaffed and unable to ensure her safety. One source said staff at Linwood expressed fear of what they believe to be a high risk of Paris being stabbed during...
Why do we have to
laughing about Paris?
What a horrible people we are. Apparently, there isn't a cell available at Guantanamo Bay.
I'm reflecting on a funny, ironic music.
Something just tickled your fancy.
A limerick that I heard this morning. During recreation, apparently the recreation hours will consist of bleeding out Paris Hilton like a pig, where the jail population comes together in large groups. And apparently the Linwood people don't like this because they work a lot of overtime and the guards rely on iPods, cell phones, etc. to help them coordinate their schedule because they work a lot of overtime, but they're not allowed to have any of those things for fear that they get a picture of Paris Hilton sitting on the john, as it were.
So, oh, there's a whole bunch of women in prison movies from the 1950s on TCM this week.
Really?
Yeah, a whole bunch of
them. Sure, that's a coincidence. That's fantastic.
Meanwhile, Paris's sister Nikki and on again, off again, who knows what, Stavros Nachos rolled into the Twin Towers Correctional Institute yesterday to visit Paris, waltzing right into the building without having to wait in the ridiculously long visitor line like regular people. Family members and friends of the other inmates complained that they had to wait more than 3 hours. A TMZ has learned that the two were ushered in during a break of the normal visitor schedule due to Paris' special needs situation. While she didn't say a word about the situation on her way into the jail, Nikki opened up on the way out, telling reporters Paris is being strong. Also, somebody said she is Her PR people say she is learning and growing, whatever that means.
What is it you're supposed to learn? She doesn't have any books, to the best of my knowledge. What is she, just sitting there using her own brain as a resource?
I don't know.
Yeah.
She's learning. She's reciting the alphabet.
And you're right, though, that all of these press releases sound like they are written by some hack. Mm. I mean, every one of them. Like that, because, you know, she decided not to appeal, which is sort of strange.
Sure.
I mean, at this point, it's like your street cred and your image are totally blown. Why would you not appeal it? What are you, trying to look all hard? That ship has sailed. The idea of you somehow looking tough and streetwise, that's a thing of the past. That's not going to happen. So I don't know what she's got to lose by appealing. I'd be absolutely appealing if I was her. It doesn't make any sense at all. All right.
Paris Hilton legal expert said her reassignment to home detention with an electronic monitor on her ankle was a very bad thing. Law professor Stan Goldman says that for decades, the sheriff has been in charge of how prisoners are housed, but in this case, the judge outruled the sheriff's decision.
Paris Hilton, as unique a character as she is, may have actually had a permanent effect on the L.A. County justice system, because this may create precedent so in the next few cases, lawyers and judges will feel more comfortable in saying, no, we want the sheriff ordered to keep this prisoner at this facility and not that facility, regardless of what the sheriff really wants to do.
This is so great. When does Nicole Richie go to trial? Do we know, Sarah? Do we know when her DUI?
Month.
Is it next month?
Yeah, in July or August.
Oh, somebody's getting nervous, I bet. Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a great time to be us. It really is.
It really is.
All right.
And that's the latest update on the Paris Hilton.
Excellent. Let's get a couple of these. I wonder what these people are calling about. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, you know, it's always a great show, but boy, it's really, really nice to have Tim Riley back on the air.
No, it's true. The other people did an able job of filling in, but there really is only one Tim Riley.
That's right.
My thank you.
You're welcome. The reason why I was calling up is I've not watched any episodes of The Sopranos ever.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm really feeling like the guy at the craps table that just watched somebody lose their house, their clothes.
Thank God I didn't invest anything in that.
Yeah. So I know how
he feels. I watched the next to the last season and got rid of HBO.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, I realize now, and here's the other thing. I realize after last night, and I know we're going back to Sopranos talk. I swore we weren't going to do it this hour, but who am I fooling? You can't fight the tape, as they say on Wall Street. I realize now that the last story arc on that show I even cared about was Vito. Vito and the Johnny Cakes guy. That's the last time I even cared about that show. There hasn't been a story arc since then that I really cared about all that much. And I know you don't know what I'm talking about, sir, but my point is that it's been about a season and a half since I even really cared about something that was happening on that program. So, you know.
Apparently, there's an awful lot of people in this country that have been caring, now they have to find some other pointless reason to stay up late on Sunday night.
It is true. What am I going to talk to Peter Carlin about now?
All right, thank you.
Good day.
One more. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, Rick.
Hey.
Yeah, I know. It's been, an hour of Soprano talk, and actually all day for me, and I guess that's what David Chase really wanted everybody to do instead of an actual wrap-up.
I will acknowledge Bruce Agler's right about that. You know, he did accomplish the something, which is having us talk about the finale all day. We would have anyway, but I mean, especially, but even more so. But that doesn't... The question is it going to, if you look back on it in a month, is it still going to be great,
Yeah, I mean, if it went the other way, Tony got whacked, his family got whacked, you would have been, that was great, 15 minutes later, I kind of knew that, move on.
Right.
Now you're talking about it all day. But I'm kind of tired, like you were saying, about the, got to think about the ending and then interpret it in your own way. Why can't we just have it like, it comes to its natural conclusion on MASH, the world, it's war's over, the war's over, go home already.
Right, right.
And there's a bunch of good shows out there with some really good endings, and it's kind of like I can smell a top five coming, the top five best show endings.
We've thought about that. I'm not sure whether we'll be doing that or not, but we may or may not be doing that. But, yeah, you're right. It's not like it's impossible to end a great show with a brilliant finale. It can be done.
I think one of the most genius ones were with the show Newhart.
Yeah, there was the one where he woke up in bed and it was all a dream.
Yeah, it was actually Bob Hartley having a dream.
Right, with Suzanne Plachette. That was great, by the way.
That was good.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
I have one more Paris Hilton story.
Fantastic.
This is from JJ's blog. He is a former Hollywood publicist turned blogger. All his stories are straight from the horse's mouth. There are news reports of Paris Hilton shaking, twitching, sweating, crying, and limping in and out of court.
Fantastic.
When she was in court. So he says, I have several celebrities, according to my own witnesses, who know Paris Hilton was a frequent drug user. Her symptoms seem to resemble those of drug withdrawal.
Oh, I absolutely thought about that. I mean,
it wasn't abnormal to see Paris smoking weed, doing a lot of cocaine, getting drunk, smoking cigarettes, popping pills, whatever else you could think of.
I mean, I just sort of assume that she's just gacked to the gills on stuff 24 hours a day. And I mean, you know, she's going to have 40 days with no drugs. You know, that's a thing. That's, I mean, in a couple of days is when that starts to set in, I think. So, I mean, yeah, that all would make perfect sense. Fantastic. That means we can look forward to more excitement from her. I am sort of bitter about the fact that she's been sedated the last day or two. Where's the fun in that? If she's been sedated.
Well, she's behind bars. She's not much good to us right now anyway.
She's learning and growing.
I'm just saying I want to hear about a nervous breakdown, and that's never going to happen if they've got her jacked up on Valium. I want her off drugs right now, and I want her left in a cell covered in spiders. Real or imagined. All right.
And I promise that's the end of Paris Hilton stories.
No, I don't know. You know, we can make it. It doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm not proud. We can do Sopranos and Paris Hilton all day long, back to back to back. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't make
any difference to me. All right.
Well, to break up the monotony, how about a good old-fashioned roller coaster story? This one comes from Hot Springs, Arkansas.
This is a great story.
About a dozen people were on a hair-raising ride this weekend. Hot Springs Fire Department Chief Ed Davis says a fuse blew out at the Crystal Falls Amusement Park, leaving 12 people hanging upside down for about 100 feet in the air for 30 minutes.
There's a computer system that controls the ride and also controls the input of electrical sources into the ride was unable to accept the codes that the generator was sending it. Therefore, it did not allow the electrical power from the generator to enter into the system.
Now, listen, I've got a photo of this here. You get this from CBSNews.com. This is fantastic, and it just, you see, an amusement park visitor, says the caption, took this picture of the X-Coaster at Magic Springs, and it is exactly what it sounds like. It's not sideways, it's not at an angle.
It's upside down.
It is a bunch of people on a roller coaster, stuck, hanging absolutely upside down.
That's terrific.
I just showed that picture. Look at that picture. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you'll need some new pants after that. I mean, that is...
No, you need a new shirt after that.
Well done.
You need to wash your hair after that.
How are you? That is every roller coaster rider's absolute nightmare. That is like the absolute DEFCON 5 scenario when you are riding a roller coaster. God damn, I would never get on a roller coaster again after that. I will be amazed if any of these people ever goes to an amusement park again. What kind of amusement is that? Hanging upside down from... Then that's when you lose all faith in the seatbelts. You lose all faith in that little ka-chunk bar that comes down in front of you. Screw that. I mean, that's the worst day of your life. You're stuck hanging upside down in a roller coaster. F that.
It's always a shame when that happens.
Yes.
On we go now to this story. John McCain saying U.S. troops may have to stay in Iraq for decades. I like the way he doesn't give us a choice in this. He's already made that decision for us.
Thanks.
He tells ABC this week that much like South Korea, American soldiers may be involved in a supporting and training role for decades to come. Who asked our opinion about
this? I think that Iraqi military and Iraqi government will be struggling to get a total security environment for many, many years.
Meanwhile, Joe Lieberman says the U.S. should take military action against Iraq.
What we did was present them with evidence that we have, that I've seen, that I believe is incontrovertible, that the Iranians are training and equipping Iraqi extremists to come into Iraq, and they're killing American soldiers and Iraqis.
Paris Hilton's publicist are moonlighting doing things for the Defense Department.
Seriously. I mean, the borders are made out of cheesecloth. How would anybody really know? But, I mean, I guess that's just seems like a fait accompli at this point. I mean, really, the time, you know, the clock is ticking. I mean, this is, I guess the time to start one more war is running out. So why not start now?
Predictions within the U.S. military are that the president will do what is needed to stop Tehran before he leaves office in 2009, including possibly launching a military strike against its so-called nuclear facilities.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, it's wild speculation.
The begging of a 10-year-old Florida boy has resulted in the arrest of his 37-year-old mother. Police were notified after the 35-pound boy was reportedly begging for food at a neighbor's house. The woman also fed the child, called police, and asked not to be identified.
He said, "Oh, I'm so hungry." I said, where are you coming from? He said, "I don't know." And he had a blanket underneath his arm.
Ah, well, there you go. Parents of the year. Jesus. You know, is this like adopted parents? Is this like a foster mom?
No, these are regular parents.
Of course they are. They're always regular parents who've decided to reproduce and then forget to, like, it, and then either forget to feed the kid or keep him locked in a small dog kennel of some kind. God damn, there's a whole lot of people that just ought to be taken out back and just clubbed to death with a nine iron. Really, someday when I'm the granny of removable dictator, that's going to be the penalty, too. All right. Should we break? Yeah, we're like at the bottom of the hour.
Sure, why not?
All right. So on that parent clubbing note, we'll take a break here. Come back with more. It's 503-733-2970. Still to come, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, and Peter Carla. Don't go anywhere. Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on, Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, Peter Carlin. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
So, that's what we've been waiting for. Angry Sopranos fans have crashed the HBO website. The line to cancel HBO starts here.
I tried to log on to HBO last night to their website just to see what the people were saying about it. And yeah, it was completely dead. And then I went to Drudge, and it was, you know, one of Drudge's typical huge red screaming headlines. You know, HBO.com crashes under weight of wrath of angry fans and so forth. So I don't think I'm going to cancel my cable over it, but it does. And, you know, and here's the other thing. I hate to sound so relentlessly
it's
negative.
Back.
The thing about it is that I also... At least it wasn't a horrible finale that came at the end of a great season or so, because this whole season's been kind of lackluster. I thought last week was really great, and I thought there were moments that have been really good. But for the last season and a half, it's just been kind of on a downward slide to me. So at least I was sort of... I will say this, that as irritating as I found last night's finale... I mean, it would have been a real body blow if it had just been a fantastic season with a terrible ending. You know, the Shield, which, again, as I would say, is for my money the best program on television right now, had kind of a disappointing season finale for me, although they got another season to redeem themselves. You know, The Sopranos is just has been losing its punch for a while now. Last night's finale was still ass, though. Still a big pile of ass is what it was.
So the big advertisement on their website, which is now backed up, says... Carve out some family time. Big Love. Now on Monday nights, the acclaimed series returns Monday at 9.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll get all of it then.
They have a video preview.
Yeah, I'm not going to be watching that. I know that there's people who watch Big Love, which is sort of an interesting program because it's about polygamy and so forth, but it's not even for me. I know Sarah can't get past Bill Paxton and his big fence post teeth.
Oh, I had forgotten about Bill Paxton after taking Friday off.
Now you're thinking of Bill Pullman.
Oh, you're right.
Or maybe you are thinking of Bill Paxton.
Well, I can't tell the difference between the two.
That's what I'm saying. They're all really interchangeable. That new John from Cincinnati show got terrible reviews. I haven't watched that, and I know that there's some other show launching on HBO about some band or whatever. It's like some show about some dudes who play guitar or whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all about waiting for Entourage. But, you know, they must have known... HBO must have known that the Sopranos finale was going to be crap and everybody's going to be pissed off. Maybe that's why Entourage is coming, because the Entourage season finale was last week. But, you know, next 2 weeks from now, it's coming back. It's already back for another season, like before the month is out. So maybe HBO knew that the Sopranos was just going to be terrible at the end. And that's why they're bringing Entourage back so quickly, to keep us all from canceling our subscriptions. I bet, even if they didn't know the Sopranos finale was going to be bad, which I believe it was, they must have already been thinking about this. How do we get people to not cancel? And the way that they're doing it is by bringing Entourage back just a couple weeks from now. So, at least you got that to look forward to, at least.
Is that all the Entourage talk for now?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Nothing more from The Sopranos?
No, we'll get back to that in, you know, a matter of minutes, probably. I'm sure that Jim Roop saw it. I'm sure Lisa saw it. We'll talk to Carlin about it. I figure we might as well have an Entourage freeze or a Sopranos free zone for the next 19 minutes or so. And we got snuff watches and stuff to get to.
And my computer is just gross, and that's why I was stolen for time trying to get you to talk.
We can do the snuff watch.
Let's do the snuff watch.
Here's a snuff watch for whatever the hell, Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. We need some sort of hand sign for that. Fresh. You need to fill. My computer isn't working. I am the couch.
Portland, Cleveland wrestler and promoter Sandy Barr has died at the age of 69. A few weeks ago, Sandy Barr slipped into his old-fashioned white trunks, climbed barefooted to the ring at his flea market, and turned back the clock. He was 69 years old, barrel-chested, and tough as an old boot. Wrestling with his two sons, a midget and a couple of bad guys in the six-man tag team match that the crowd of 50 hooting and cheering crowd felt like it was like Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. His towering figure in a faded sport. Well, he died Saturday evening at the flea market in St. John's neighborhood. Oh, no.
How would you like to die at a flea market in St. John's?
I'm just thinking about that. Oh, gee.
The poor guy. You live your whole life. You try to become a success, and you die in St. John's at a flea market.
In industrial St. John's.
Here's the thing about that guy, though. He died owing me money, so I feel like that's a little justice right there.
How so?
Sandy Barr owes me money. Well, not anymore, because he's dead. Well, no, he still does, I guess. I'm just never going to get it. So Sandy Barr owed me hundreds of dollars. So I'm, you know...
Were you a wrestler at one time?
Yes. Yes, I was. I was the infamous El Baño. I don't want to talk about it. Except to say this.
Who is Sandy Barr?
Sandy Barr owned some flea markets. There was one of them. I don't know if it's still there. Is that one flea market still there? It was on Grand, I think. What's the street that my father's place is on? Is that Grand?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, there's that fruit market down there. You know, and there's the...
Next to Produce Row?
Yeah, yeah. At one time, Sandy Barr had a flea market down there, and then he also had a flea market in St. John's, and he also was a local wrestling promoter. But I did a bunch of... I'll just say that I did some services for him at some point. And every radio guy has these. So you probably got a list of people who owe you money. People, clients for whom you did things that never paid.
People who slipped down and never provide me with master tapes of work I've done.
Would you like to name any of those people?
Oh, that's okay. They're not worth enough to get in a tussle over.
Well, I'll say this.
We learn our lesson and don't do repeat business with them. That's all there is to it.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Because he's dead, I will now say this. Sandy Barr was one of those people. Owed me like $800.
Unfortunately, people owe me money are very much alive, probably doing it to somebody else at this very moment.
I'm not saying it was him specifically. Maybe it was somebody else in his organization. But I had done a whole bunch of...
Somebody dropped the ball at the St. John's flea market.
Yeah, I had done a whole bunch of advertisement work for which they just declined to pay, ever. So I sent an AE out to look into that, but amazingly enough, the AE just lacked follow-through, just completely failed to get my cash for me. So
well, maybe he received the message and... That may cause his demise.
Maybe.
I owe him some money.
He was so ashamed of what he'd done. You know, there's a tire dealer in Spokane who still owes me like $1,200. And you know what? I got to tell you, that was like 14 years ago. And I still know the guy's name. I know exactly what he looks like. I know where his business is located. Owes me over $1,000 for work I did 14 years ago. And I know I will never get that money. I know that I will never be paid for these services that I perform, for this work that I did. You son of a bitch. I know that I will never, ever, ever see that money, but I will never forget about it. I will never get over it. I will never forgive you. I will remain bitter about it forever. So, there you go. So that's the guy in Spokane. The Sandy Barr owed me less money, but he did owe me money.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm going to move on.
Well, here's somebody who died who you don't know.
At least I don't think
they owe me money? I don't know unless you dealt with Pamela Lowe, who is credited for developing the flavored coatings for Captain Crunch. She died at New London Hospital in New Hampshire. Lowe was working for the Arthur D. Little consulting firm in the Boston area when she was asked to find a flavor for the corn and oat cereal. She had earned a degree in microbiology at the University of New Hampshire, but drew on a recipe for a dish that her grandmother, Luella Lowe, used to serve at her home in Derry, New Hampshire. I didn't know this. She used to serve rice with a peanut butter brown sauce that she made. She served it over rice on Sundays. Captain Crunch was introduced in 1963 and has been enticing children and adults ever since.
Has been destroying the roofs of American mouths ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I'm not saying I don't know what it tastes like, because obviously, like all Americans, I've eaten hundreds of pounds of Cap'n Crunch.
And it sticks to your teeth.
Cap'n Crunch, yes, as they say. Yeah, it's like having a cheap cavity filling.
Yeah. You can't get rid of it.
Fills in the crevasses in your teeth. I'm saying, can you describe the flavor of Cap'n Crunch? Does it taste like a known existing thing? In other words, there's like a chocolate cereal that sort of tastes like chocolate, or there's a cereal that tastes like strawberry, or there's cereal that tastes like
there's nothing like
Does Captain Crunch taste like an existing thing, or is it its own flavor?
It's its own flavor.
Captain Crunch taste is its own taste. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Quickly, let's go around the room here. In your realm of sugary cereals, your favorite. Go, Sarah.
I would say, Captain Crunch with the crunch berry things. And
oh, now with crunch berries. Mm-hmm. You're saying not the traditionalist. Oh. You're Captain Crunch with crunch berries.
I have to say I like that.
Tim Riley.
Cocoa Krispies.
Really?
Why so surprised?
Sort of the Rice Krispie things, but they're chocolate.
Yes.
That's interesting. Because I don't know anybody that really likes chocolate breakfast cereal.
You got to remember that I'm part of the bouncing off the wall, yelling and screaming generation. Parents got their kids all sugared up, and the teachers couldn't figure out why they're behaving like wild animals. You know, and they actually tie kids to chairs back then.
You're like home eating chocolate frosted sugar bombs by the pound. All right, okay, fair enough. No. I'm not saying I don't understand that. I'm just saying it's just one of those things that I view, no disrespect. In my experience, young children tend to like chocolate cereal, here's the thing, because chocolate cereal doesn't taste anything like real chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in my experience, a lot of times once their taste buds mature, people say, well, this doesn't really taste like real chocolate.
I thought you were talking as a child, not today.
Oh, well, now. Do you eat sugared cereals at all now?
I kind of like Life cereal every so often.
That's so Life perfect. Is really good.
It's so perfect that it's an adult, your favorite cereal is Life.
Why wouldn't it be?
No, that's just entirely, if you were to ask me, that's exactly what I would have said. If you would have said, like, what is Tim Riley's preferred cereal? I would have said Life cereal.
It's a cereal of mature newsmen.
That'll be their new tagline. 10 out of 10 mature newsmen agree. Like, you in a lab coat. But as a child, it was Cocoa Krispies.
Yes.
All right, Scotty? Count Chocula? Or Cocoa Puffs? Yeah, one of the... Yeah. Yeah, see, again, with the chocolate cereal, that is the sort of thing I think you only appreciate as a child. And then once you're an adult and you sort of go like, this tastes like ass, and then you move on. I'm saying for me, it was Fruit Loops. I was a big fan of Fruit Loops, and or I would take Trix. In a pinch, I would take Trix. But I was a big fan of Captain Crunch. As an adult, every now and again, like maybe once a year on a Friday, I'll go to the supermarket on a Friday evening and just buy a big-ass box of Captain Crunch, and I will eat that over the course of the weekend. Not very often, like once a year now. Just good times. And then, they have the weird, they've got the peanut butter crunch and the chocolate crunch and so forth. But I'm kind of a purist. I go for the original. All right, here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
So that's the end of the Snuffwatch.
So the Captain Crunch creator is dead. All mourn her now. Hail the victorious dead.
Is rightly proud of its first astronaut ever. His name is Jeff Barnes. No, it isn't. It doesn't say what his name is.
Where did you get Jeff Barnes from?
Well, that comes later in the story.
Okay.
Nebraskan astronaut Clayton Anderson is on board the space shuttle, I believe. Even though the mission is for 11 days, he will stay aboard for the next 6 months, returning in November. That's a long time for any Nebraskan. Jeff Barnes, an old time schoolmate, says he's really not surprised to see his friend in fellow Nebraskan aboard as an astronaut.
In elementary school, he had the solar system in his bedroom made out of the little styrofoam balls and the whole deal. So he's in the telescope the whole 9 yards. So he's been after this for a long time.
He had styrofoam balls as a kid. Therefore, it would have made him a fine astronaut.
It's like a friend of mine who had beer nuts.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Police have arrested 10 people and seized more than $800,000 in counterfeit movies, music, and clothing from two Hillsboro swap meets. It's Oregon's biggest piracy raid ever.
Is that where Sandy Barr died? No, he died at the...
I was thinking about that one. But they did it in his memory.
How sad you die at a swap meet in St. John's. I wonder how long it took before anybody even noticed the body.
That's true.
How long before they even noticed the stench of death over just the stench of the regular clientele at that place?
They found 50,000 bootleg DVDs and CDs after raiding the Millennium Flea Market and the M&M Swap Meet. I guess they swapped M&Ms there. They found that cheap copies burned by computer and quality discs of movies still in theaters that were manufactured almost like the real thing. These machines were used to make the pirate. The product usually starts at $1 million, so the capital flow from these piracy operations is humongous.
The Busted Lead Authority is to the top of a piracy ring that steals millions of dollars from copyright holders around the world. 10 people have been arrested. That's that. All right. Say, how do you feel about two girls kissing on a TriMet bus?
I am for it. Rick Emerson votes yes.
Well, time for you to speak up.
Okay.
Two teenage girls say they were kicked off a TriMet bus for being affectionate with each other, and they're considering complaining against the driver of the bus. Mecca Rich and Jocelyn O'Neill are both 14. They admit to kissing on the number 12 bus. There's a lot of kissing going on there, I don't know. It travels on Barber Boulevard around 5 p.m. They were heading to the Sexual Minority Youth Recreation Center. They say the female passenger complained to the driver that they were kissing and that the driver told them to knock it off and call them sickos.
Really?
Yeah.
One of Portland's more enlightened bus drivers.
Yeah. So a TriMet spokesman said it is the policy of the organization never to kick an underage or vulnerable person off the bus. The girls say they would have stopped kissing if the driver told them he, let's see. That doesn't make any sense. TriMet says they're talking to the driver about the incident and the investigation continues. What is it?
I mean, really, is there some rule on TriMet that says you can't kiss somebody? I'm pretty sure there is, and I've looked at
a big red X
on somebody's lips. I've looked at those little hieroglyphs, those pictographs that are up there. There's the one that says, you know, you must have papers, where they show the poor citizen being interrogated by the representative of the state. Mm-hmm. There's the one through the soda thing. The soda glass with the straws, and that there's the one that says, there's the one that shows the dog like in a suitcase. Mm-hmm. That indicates that your dog must be in a proper carry-on case. Mm-hmm. And then there's the one that says no radio, showing like a 1980s boombox. That's about it. There isn't anything that says you can't kiss. So next time a driver tells you not to kiss, why don't you tell him to stuff it?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell him?
Yeah, number 12 bus.
Yeah, number
everybody
12.
Told him number 12 bus.
That's exactly what we're saying. So you tell that guy.
Usually driving at 5 o'clock.
Tell that guy he can suck it. So that's seriously. And then he just kicked him off the bus.
Yeah.
That's great. Fantastic. All right. Remember, kids, it is a red state once you get outside of Portland. So
that's true. I like in the L.A. public transit system, they have...
you didn't have to ride L.A. public transit while you were there.
No, I did not, but I saw it.
Okay.
On a bus, it has a red X through a giraffe, which isn't supposed to mean no giraffes. It means no pets. But they happen to pick a giraffe as an example of no pets.
Please, no Tasmanian devils. No coelacanths on the bus, please.
No, I made the mistake of renting a car.
No Archaeopteryx.
What? I made the mistake of renting a car that cost twice as much as what I booked it for. Because there were all kinds of hidden airport charges.
Did they upsell you? Oh, they didn't. You didn't get there and they went, well, for just $10 more, you can have.
Well, here's what they also do now. They will fill up the gas for you at 12 cents below the cost.
Don't ever let them fill up the gas for you. Don't ever, if you have them fill up the gas, they charge you like $9 a gallon.
Well, no, this is different. There's a new deal that if you sign ahead of time, it's only $3.04 a gallon.
As opposed to how much, like if you do it yourself?
It's like $3.42.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, but you have to do that when you pick up the car, or do you do it online?
You do it when you get there, because the online price did not agree with the price when I drove the car out of the garage.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would they...
It's an option.
But how would they even... Okay, so you sign up in advance... We're not talking about car rental rates in Los Angeles. That is the definition of being relatable, isn't it?
Yes.
Sorry about that. But that doesn't make any sense. If gas is, let's say, $3.40,
yeah,
and they're offering to fill your car for $3.12 a gallon, how aren't they losing money? Why would they possibly do that?
I guess as a service to you, the customer.
Why would they care about giving
you... We'll find out when I get my MasterCard.
I was just going to say, it doesn't seem like... I don't even understand. Between all the phone sex charges.
Well, no, one of the phone sex charges has been rescinded. They're still working on the second one.
All right. Well, it's just nothing but phone sex and gas here.
Basically.
The life of a newsman. All right. I don't even know what we're doing. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
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 I just want to know if you guys heard about the story of the people getting stuck on the Ferris wheel at Rose Festival for a long length of time last night. They forgot about them and closed and left them up there.
That's
a guy and his son. I saw it on the news this morning.
That's great. That's wonderful. And here's why it's wonderful. Now, I'm assuming they were not harmed.
Pardon me?
I'm assuming they were okay. They're not harmed.
Yeah, they were fine. They were a little bummed, but... Yeah.
Well, here's why I love stories like that, because people accuse us of being negative Nancys when it comes to the Rose Festival, and that we traffic in stereotypes and crude generalizations when we talk about the crack-slinging operators and assemblers of those rides down there. So I love stories like this because it does prove that we are correct in the larger sense.
That's so true.
The bottom rung of society recruited to run like the slingshot.
Well, when you see a guy with a crescent wrench and a rubber hammer putting together your roller coaster, you know, it's like kind of scary.
Covered in open sores. Yeah. So they were running. So they're running the Ferris wheel, and they just forgot that some people were on there.
Yeah, I guess it was like the last ride of the night or something, and this guy and his son were up on the top, and they thought they were just going to be there for a few minutes to, you know, let people off, and then it turned into like, I think it was more than a half an hour, and finally somebody heard them screaming.
Oh, that's so great.
I
love the idea, dude. Hello? And, dude, especially when you consider they would have been there until, because the Rose Festival's over, so they would have been there for like 18 hours probably.
Yeah. That's the one time you wish you had your cell phone.
Yeah, seriously.
That'd have been a fun 911 call.
That's fantastic. I love stories like that. Thank you, sir.
Hey, T, have a good day.
All right, there you go. Well, I guess we'll just have to make out. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Dozens of bicyclists hit the streets of Portland Saturday night. Many wore bike helmets, but not much else. They rode naked.
Yeah.
Portland's 170.
You know, people who go naked are people you never want to see naked.
It really is true. They were taking part in the World Naked Bike Ride. Cyclists said their goal was to expose their vulnerability on the road and protest oil dependency.
Like, that's going to help anything.
Yeah, we'll get right on that.
Cheney is very...
I'm sure that OPEC is going to win. They'll take heed and start altering things right now. Seriously, you ride your bicycle naked, you're just asking. You're asking for something bad to happen. You're asking to become that guy and that bike sign where his front tire is hitting one of the tracks and he's just going right ass over tea kettle, right over the handlebars. No one will have sympathy for you. You'll be made the object of fun right here on this news program.
That is too bad, isn't it?
Yes, it is. From Olympia comes word a 22-year-old man was killed when a mailbox pulled and impaled him in a car crash. Zachary Smith of Olympia was going north on the road at 1 o'clock in the morning when he drifted to the shoulder. The car then crashed into a row of mailboxes before flipping over. Amid the crash, a 4-inch by 4-inch mailbox post slammed through the windshield and struck him, killing him instantly.
Oh, that's a bad way to go.
It is.
All right, but what else do we have?
Let's do one more and then we'll take a break and we got Jim Roop coming up.
Oh, we do.
What is it?
Well, it's about time.
It is. We've spent almost 9 minutes since we've talked about Paris Hilton.
State, county, and local emergency people in Oregon and Idaho were busy this past week investigating several motorcycle crashes during the Hell's Canyon Motorcycle Rally in Baker City. OSP reports at least 9 motorcycle crashes late Friday into Saturday evening. They believe that Sunday's wet weather helped keep down activity. One wreck was a collision with a deer, and another motorcyclist went down trying to avoid another bike coming at him in his lane. A motorcycle fell down an embankment after losing control and hitting a guardrail. Injuries varied.
Seems like if you're biking through a place called Hell's Canyon, you really ought to see the injuries coming. That's like that, what was that place that those people died the other day, and it was like, I don't know, it was like Destruction Path or wherever the hell it was. All right, we should break here. We'll come back. Jim Roop in Los Angeles coming up later on with Paris Hilton news. We will continue to dissect last night's Sopranos finale. Later on, we have seen a radio correspondent, Lisa Goddard, and Peter Carlin for the Oregonian, plus more from the returned Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay there, won't you please? Program is 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We can now resume our endless kvetching about the Sopranos finale last night. 503-733-2970. You want to email? You can also do that. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Hold on just one second. All right, here we go. 503-733-2970.
You can email us, rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Still to come, more news from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, James Roop from Los Angeles, and Oregonian television critic Peter Carlin, who will be here. And I have not read... I said earlier, I have not read his review of last night's Sopranos finale, but I'm betting he's a big fan, as most of the... There does seem to be an almost absolute... How do I put this? It's not that there's so much a consensus among just the among the people, among the rabble, the hoi polloi, because they seem to be equally divided, as we heard this morning in the just a sort of random smattering of phone calls we took. But all the critics, without exception almost, I would say probably 90% of the critical reviews that I've read today seem to be very bullish on last night's Sopranos finale. So we'll talk more about that. Before we do anything else, though, ladies and gentlemen, will you please make way from the Hill, CNN Radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard, joining us now on this Monday. Why, hello, and how are you today?
Hello, guys. How you doing?
We are dandy. Lisa, how was your weekend? How were things?
It was good. It was a working weekend, but it was all right.
It was a busman's holiday, as they say.
Exactly.
It was, okay, so you watched last night's Sopranos finale.
Yes.
All right, and thoughts, go.
I'm confused. You know, the first beat afterwards, I hated it, but then a minute later... I really liked it, and now I love it.
Here's what I don't understand. I don't understand. Maybe this is me. Maybe if I'd gone to like Gonzaga Prep instead of going to going to my hideous public school, maybe these things would make more sense to me. Anytime I immediately am suspicious of any ending, any movie, anything that happens in the arts where people explain it by saying, well, you won't like it. But then later on, once you think about it, like to me, that is always an unhappy consumer trying to justify a purchase in retrospect. That is always someone with buyer's remorse trying to convince themselves that they really do like the thing that they secretly don't like, but that they are convinced that they are convincing themselves they're happy with because they paid money for it.
Oh, you may have me pegged.
That's all I'm saying.
That's very possible. But, well, you know what the problem was, I don't know if your listeners, if people have been saying this, but I thought that, because we were actually watching it about a minute behind because, Jason had to run off and take care of some business at one point. So, and, no commercials on HBO.
Right,
so
right.
We were just a minute behind, and I thought that something went wrong in the DVR.
Yes, exactly.
Right at the end. And I said, what did you push? He's looking at me, what did you push?
That was my wife and I were sitting there, we're watching it last night, and then whatever Meadow opens the door, whatever the hell she does, and there's that "Don't stop, believe it," and then it gets to the "Don't stop" line, and then wah wah, it stops, and then it goes to black, and I swear to God, everybody in the country, hour by hour, time zone by time zone, everybody thought the same thing. I swear I paid that cable bill. And then,
okay, it's been all stupid, not stupid, but it's all been Capitol Hill stuff today. I haven't talked to anybody about The Sopranos yet.
Well, it's pretty much been dominating the show so far. I do have my finger on the cultural zeitgeist, the pulse. It's what I do.
What did you think? What's everybody thinking? Everybody happy, unhappy?
Well, the bulk of the audience seems to think that I'm some sort of a small-brained ass because I didn't like
it. Perhaps because you tell them that regularly.
Then maybe. Perhaps I'm programming them to think the worst of me. Here's my thing, and this is the phrase, I sort of said this earlier today, and this is a phrase I'm going to be repeating throughout the day, which is that, not only did they have a year to write this season, but then they pushed back the debut of this season by another 4 months, because it was supposed to have started in January, it started in March. David Chase had a year and a half to come up with not only last night, but with this season as a whole.
Right.
And I feel like the program itself, not just the final 5 minutes, but I felt like last night's finale just felt very half-baked. It felt rushed. It felt like they were leaping from scene to scene really quickly. And it's like, to me, you got to figure out what you're going to do. Are you going to tie up everything? And if so, you got to spend more time on it. If you're not going to tie things up, if you're not going to resolve the storylines, then why are you wasting my time showing me a bunch of scenes and a bunch of story developments that are never going to amount to anything? They're not going to matter. I felt like large sections of last night's episodes were a waste of my time because they were spending time showing AJ's deal with his car.
Or Meadows, I guess her fiancé, the whole conflict there that they were sort of building up with Tony.
Exactly, which by definition they are never going to pay off, and it was therefore wasted time because it wasn't entertaining enough in and of itself. The only reason it needed to exist was if it was going to play a part in the end of the show, which it did not, unless this was all a setup to do some sort of theatrical release or some major motion picture, in which case I will just feel sort of cheated.
Well, that's definitely what it felt like to me. I mean, I felt like they're just keeping the door open, and I felt like they were just, it was the over-the-shoulder effect. They wanted us the whole time to be kind of really jumpy and in the end, without too much reason at all.
I mean, I will grant, and a lot of people pointed this out, I will grant that the final 4 or 5 minutes of the episode were really, really nerve-wracking. That's
right.
Fine, but I mean, I guess that's not much of an accomplishment. They've had, I mean, to say that the last 4 or 5 minutes were really great and really compelling.
83 episodes, right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's The Sopranos. Of course they're capable of 4 or 5 minutes at a stretch that are great. To me, that somehow isn't impressive. The idea that somehow they can do 4 minutes that are really good, I guess people's standards have been lowered sufficiently that 4 great minutes somehow make up for the rest of the episode. And to me, you know, I guess I'm no longer impressed by The Sopranos being able to do 4 good minutes. That it's just not enough for me.
No, I think they definitely suffer from just years of amazing television, and I think this whole season, it almost seems like they started out immediately trying to lower our expectations with, we're going to put you guys at a lake house and you're going to be there for a whole episode and
right.
Suck it up.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, oh wow, they're doing classic Sopranos. They're going to build all these crazy plot lines and somebody close to Tony is going to go after him, and it didn't really work out that way. I don't know. I think they were trying to lower expectations from the beginning on this final bunch.
Let's see. How about this? Here's a typical email today. This is from Mary. Mary says, "Rick, I can't believe I'm the only." Everybody thinks that they're the genius. By the way, every single person, every review I've read, every blog I've read, every email. Everybody thinks that they're brilliant and everybody else is a moron. Everybody thinks they're the only one to see the genius of the ending. This email says, "Rick, I can't believe I'm the only one who sees it. When Tony told the FBI guy about the bank account used by terrorists to aid the war in Iraq, he wrote his and his family's death sentence. The guy who went into the bathroom at the end blew up the diner. That's why the silence and the black screen. We're all dead. If Meadow had only taken 10 more times at trying to parallel park, there would have been a witness, and we would have actually seen the diner explode. But alas, all good things come to an end. I think the ending was brilliant. They blew up the diner. Thanks for listening, Mary." So, I mean, you know,
that is what, and people probably said this too. That's what they were looking for. They were looking for exactly what's happening now, for radio stations, for people in their cars, on the phone, and work to have this whole disagreement over whether it all did go kabloom, or whether we just didn't see Tony getting the whole family getting taken out, or if it just was a comment on and they kept on going.
I suppose. I mean, I guess.
I think that's the point. Is that it's sort of like it's up to the viewer. The viewer gets to kind of end it how they want to end it.
I resent. You know what it is. That's to me like when I pay $35 for a concert ticket and the guy wants the crowd to sing the chorus for him. You know what I mean? I'm paying. You do the goddamn work. Jesus. All right. Well,
did you see the show?
Maybe from now on I'll just end the show at 2:50 every day and I'll let the audience do the last 10 minutes of the show by themselves.
You know, I think you'd have some volunteers for that, though.
Probably.
I'd listen.
All right.
But this is my question. Did you watch the show that came after that?
John from Cincinnati. I did not. I was too busy. I was too busy answering phone calls and text messages from my friends who were, and trying to calm my wife down, who was stomping around the house saying, "This is effing BS. F this." She's just seething and as profane as I have ever seen her about the finale last night. So, no, I did not.
No, it was very, because I've got a little cold, and so I had some cold medicine thing going on. It was really trippy and disturbing. In fact, I could not get in it. And so I ended up asking Jason, I was like, "Jason, can we just put basketball on? Because I'm going to have bad dreams watching this."
I'm a big fan of Bruce Greenwood, who is, I believe, the title character in that show, but I didn't watch it. No, I heard.
It was, I don't know. I couldn't hook into it. Maybe next week.
The good thing about HBO is everything's on like 100 times in a row.
Yeah,
so.
Oh, it's so serious. So serious. This is a serious show.
I was actually so angry, and it's not even angry. I sound like such a girl. I was so unsatisfied. I felt so unsatisfied and unfulfilled by last night's Sopranos episode that I actually went and watched some reruns of The Wire just to try to like get just to get some substance into my soul.
That is good stuff.
It really is. The Wire is, I would say, the second best show on television after The Sopranos, or after The Shield, rather. And so just to try to give my soul just some cleansing, I watched The Wire last night. So
you know, I haven't seen The Shield in a couple weeks, but Jason, who seems to be coming up a lot in this conversation, asked me to see if it came up on your show that apparently that moment on that show has come back.
Yes, the moment which we all now only refer to as the moment on the Shield. And every Shield fan knows what I'm talking about when I say that moment.
Incident? I don't know. I'm not even sure what to call it.
The great unpleasantness. There's never been anything more unpleasant than that moment. Yeah, it came back 2 weeks ago and has stayed back, and it remains to be seen if this uneasy alliance between Vic Mackey and David Acevedo will remain intact, or whether it will collapse like a flan in a cupboard.
Sorry, I consult the DVR.
I will say this: the finale of the Shield, the final, I don't know, 90 seconds of the Shield finale are not all that great to me. They started kind of doing a little Deus Ex Machina to try to explain some things, but overall, I found it to be really, really strong, and certainly much better than the goddamn Sopranos finale last night. which, and again, maybe the whole point was just to make us all talk about it today. But if that's the case, like, to what end? I mean, the show's over. There's nothing. I mean, I guess to maybe pimp DVD sales or something like that, but unless he's going to be doing a feature film, I don't understand what the point is in making something, in sacrificing the quality of last night's show simply to have us all talk about it. It's not like he's even really got anything to sell in a real sense. So, the whole thing is just it's just sticking in my craw today.
I'm sorry, Rick.
That's okay. It's all right. I'm going to get past. I'm a professional. I'll play through the pain.
That's right. You've got the why. You've got your intravenous other forms of entertainment.
I will say there's a final observation, and I said this earlier, is that, you know, the only good thing about it is, and it is only a relative goodness, is that in my opinion, the last season and a half of The Sopranos has not been all that great. The Vito story arc, where he was, he'd gone off and he was gay and whatnot. That was really great. I thought that was good stuff.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's the last story arc I really cared about. I mean, that was the last time.
But poor Anthony, man. The kid that played Anthony, jeez.
No.
Drove me crazy.
Well, that's the thing. That's the other thing. Every episode, especially last night, which was an hour and 5 minutes long. It was slightly longer than a regular episode. And so, I apologize, by the way, that you're bearing the brunt of my just endless wrath about this.
I'm with you. Bring it on.
I'm just saying it was an hour and 5 minutes long, so my wife and I are looking at our watches, and it's like at the 45-minute mark, again, back to Anthony, who's sitting in his room being a little depressed bastard, and I'm looking at my watch going, come on! There's like 20 minutes left. You got like 100 things to wrap up. Let's get with the program.
The last episode, this is what you're doing. You got this whiny kid.
And it ends, the AJ story arc ends with him, blowing up his SUV by mistake, and his parents buy him a brand new BMW. They hand him a movie script, and they give him, this is the other thing I forgot to point out, Sarah. So AJ, because he's a little bastard, inadvertently blows up his SUV. His parents buy him a new BMW. They give him a movie script, and they structure a deal so he gets to be a creative producer. He gets to be a development director on a major motion picture.
Probably could go for it. It's hard to say what he's doing.
Yeah, he ends up with a movie deal and a BMW handed to him by his parents. The end.
Hey, and whatever happened to that whole story arc of, like, Tony running out of money? And gambling, and like that he was going to be really up against it with the money.
No, just another thing that they
far.
Another thing that, and it's not even that like they left it hanging. They just did it for a couple episodes. I mean, it had never been an issue before. Suddenly, for two episodes, it's like an after-school special where he's got a gambling problem.
It was like all throughout those episodes.
And then it's just gone. Never brought up again. Never addressed. Doesn't matter.
No worries.
So it's just, it's just one of the. I just feel like the last season or so has been sloppy writing. And I feel like
I think it was one of their best seasons. I think that's true. I don't know. Maybe they were trying to. Maybe it was one of those they had too many cooks in the kitchen. They were going in all kinds of directions, and they never went in any one direction.
It's not just that. I know that Gandolfini has been done with that role for a long time. He said repeatedly, he's like, I'm so done. I'm ready to be done being Tony Soprano. And I know David Chase, man, they had to throw pots of money and basically get that guy back at gunpoint to continue writing the show. Because even David Chase at one point was like, it's like, to hell with this. I'm done. So I think that it was burnout. I think that the writer and the,
you know what? That's probably right. That kind of does feel a little bit like that.
I think that they were just burned out, and they were just, as Stephen King would say, they weren't even writing it some more. They were just gutting it out. They were just grinding it out, trying to get to the finish line. And I think that quality suffers when all you're doing is trying to get to the finish line, and that's all you can see. You don't even really care about the quality of the work. You're just trying to get the thing finished.
But could they have ended it in a way that would have made, I mean, I guess they could have, it's The Sopranos, for goodness sake, they had some amazing episodes, but it would have made everybody happy. I mean, I really do like that ending. I thought it was kind of cool. I like that they're leaving it open to everybody's mind. And I hear your argument, you know, we're paying you to make the choice.
I suppose the other thing, and after today, I'm going to make these observations I've made a couple times already in the show, but this is the only day I can really do them. So I'm not going to pretend that this is some brand new observation I'm just now coming up with. The other thing about last night's finale is that final 5 minutes, which was really great and nerve-wracking, seemed to me almost directly lifted from Boogie Nights. I don't know if you've seen Boogie Nights or not.
I don't remember that.
There's
though.
A sequence where they're up in the Hollywood Hills, and they're up there doing this drug deal, and the guy puts in Sister Christian by Night Ranger. And Sister Christian is playing, and they're ratcheting up the tension, and you're waiting for the gunfire to start. And in terms of tone and in terms of soundtrack and execution, that diner sequence seemed almost directly lifted from Boogie Nights. And it just, to the point that I found it very distracting. So I'm not pretending that I'm better than David Chase or that I'm a better writer or director or a better actor. I'm just saying it does seem like an unsatisfying way to end a series. And I understand the idea that sometimes the audience doesn't always get what they want, but I also am not a big fan of just giving the audience of just giving them what feels like a cop out, you know? So
now I think the whole, you're right, this whole last season, like the whole Philly at Tardo, they could have just gone, you know, that could have been fantastic. They didn't need to start that little war about 3 episodes back.
It seemed like a little too easy that they were able to get to Phil and clip him. If, in fact, Tony got killed at the restaurant, which a lot of people are saying, that feels like a little bit of a cop-out, because I don't believe that a guy who's as paranoid and as careful as Tony would not notice the incredibly suspicious guy at the bar staring at him and then walking right up to him. So it's all very confusing.
I think the FBI agent's last name is Goddard.
Really? That is true. That is true. You are right.
It is Ron Goddard.
Yes. In fact, that is the case. I did notice that last night.
See?
All right, I'm going to stop now. I'm going to take 5 seconds to reset. Hold on. 2, 3, 4, 5. All right. On the political tip, I know that you do actually have a real job.
All about it, right?
Well, they're doing this no confidence vote, but the White House already said that they didn't care and they were going to tell the Senate to go pound it.
Yeah,
regardless.
What's the White House going to say? First of all, you know, I think you've got two sides. You've got the White House saying we really don't care. What are you talking about? Congress?
Yeah,
what?
Right.
You know, and then you've got the Democrats in Congress saying this is a huge vote. This is the biggest vote ever. They're not quite saying that, but they're making a big deal of it. And the truth is, I keep telling people, the truth is in the middle somewhere, that the White House is feeling the pressure on Gonzalez. But this White House never shows its cards until, you know, the day after they proclaim that Donald Rumsfeld will be in that job until the end of the administration. Then the next day, he's gone.
Right.
So you never really know what matters to the White House and what doesn't. But the Democrats are betting that this is a win-win for them, because even if the president doesn't do anything, they're going to get more attention on what they think is a weakness for the White House.
All right, there you go. So
there you go. But here's the deal: they're not going to actually get to the no confidence vote. They're going to have a procedural vote before that, and I don't think that they're going to make it past the 60 votes to end the debate.
All right. Is it true that George Bush was, I swear to God, I'm reading this now off the Associated Press, greeted as a hero in Albania?
Yes, and Bulgaria.
Why?
I think largely because of the U.S. role in the breakup of the Soviet Union, and also in Albania because George Bush is supporting the independence of Kosovo from Serbia, and that's something the Albanians really want.
Didn't the breakup of the Soviet Union happen like 15 years ago? Are they just getting the news there? Or
It's still, World War II was still a big deal in the 60s.
Yeah, I suppose. All right.
You know, like that, but yeah, there's stories that a large number of children in that whole region are named Bill and Hillary because of that whole war happened on their watch, and that now they think there'll be a lot of children named George. What's amazing is Albania is a Muslim country, and it may be the only Muslim country in the world.
I love the idea of a Muslim named George.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Okay, well, we're going to bring the curtain down on this long, rant-filled segment. I apologize for my juvenile anger today.
I've loved it.
All right, we'll talk to you very soon. Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Thank you, sister. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We got to break. Back after this with Tim Riley. Later on, we have CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop joining us from Los Angeles, Ree Paris Hilton. Peter Carlin from the Oregonian coming up at 2 o'clock, Likas at 3, Donna Mike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. You stay right there.
No.
That'll be the next step. That'll be the next step in her street cred. And we're talking about Amy Winehouse. She's great. Her substance abuse is so authentic. It's 503-733-2970.
Yeah,
kind of. It's because she's a tortured artist. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. You know what she looks like? She looks like a really trashy, straight-haired... God, what the hell was her name from Gross Point Blank? Minnie Driver? Like, if Minnie Driver was, like, really scummy and, like... If somebody turned her out... If Minnie Driver was having to go out and, like, work the corner for the rent, she'd be Amy Winehouse. All right, it's five. I have to confess that I've heard almost none of her music, by the way, because I was confused with what's her name. I'm always confusing her with
Lily Allen.
Yeah, I'm getting the two of them confused in my head all the time. Didn't one of them sound like they're straight out of 1960?
That's Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, Amy Winehouse. She's got that record, which is pretty amazing sounding. I mean, what I've heard of it, I just heard a little bit. I'm like everybody else. I just heard the 29-second samples on iTunes. And it's weird because it sounds like some old Stax record or something. It sounds like some old soul record from the 60s. But it was almost immediately overshadowed by the fact that she's just the news every day for, like, shooting heroin into her eyeball or something. All right, here's what's coming up. Jim Roop from CNN Radio, Los Angeles.
Hi, it's her.
All right. I'm sure whatever it is, it's not spiders having laid eggs inside your eyeball.
Thanks, Rick.
Uh-huh. Here's Tim Riley, kid.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A deer has been caught wandering through the South Park block.
Fantastic.
I stole that from some lame intern.
Really?
Yeah, I can't take credit for that one. And I've been searching around for good headline, and I stole that from somebody else. But I think we do it better than anyone else. So what? We can just steal things from people and make them better.
Of course. If I, as Paul Stanley said, just make sure you're stealing diamonds, not glass.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, if you steal it from us, it is stolen twice. If we worked it out farther enough in advance, we could have done like a doe, and then you would have said a deer, and I would have said a female deer. But, we didn't really have that kind of prep time.
No, we didn't.
All right.
Then it's Monday.
Okay.
Well, there was a little wildness downtown. When the reports of a deer loose in the area, a call started coming in during the noontime lunch hour when people spotted a young deer in the park blocks. It somehow got across I-405, where Lincoln school students snapped pictures as the deer pranced around the school track. Animal control did not respond. They're busy. So fish and wildlife officials were called in, but they're not doing anything either. They hope the deer will soon find its way back into the woods of the West Hills.
Wait, did they catch the deer?
No. It belongs to the wealthy people who live in the West Hills.
You don't get a deer in South East.
they trucked it in with the peacock.
It was graffiti.
You can't have beautiful things where you live. They're only for the people with money in the West Hills.
Thank you.
Cowboys wrangle four bulls off the highway after a trailer crash, and this is no bull. The trailer towing this cattle was westbound on Highway 22 near Salem when the trailer flipped over.
Oh, that's the other thing. Yeah, you missed the I-5 disaster on Friday.
Was that when another truck pulled over?
You weren't here on Friday when a truck tipped over and blocked all four lanes of I-5.
How did that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. Deb Wright, who works upstairs, it took her 2.5 hours to get here from West Lynn on Friday. I mean, Friday was just a disaster for everybody except for us.
But I took the max.
It was just, Friday was, every single thing that could have gone wrong for the people outside of this room did. It was pretty fantastic. It was great is what it was.
So it was good that Paris Hilton came along and brightened everyone's
day. Oh, man. I can't even tell you. Friday, that show should be flash frozen. It should be taken, stuck in a...
That is the best of.
Really, and I do mean, and I know no disrespect, but it really was just the best day ever. I'm sorry that you had to miss it.
I do, too.
I know.
How often do I take days off?
No, it was just the worst
luck. All the boring shows are boring days.
I know. All right.
They're all little gems.
Well, we'll return to the news with Tim Riley in just a moment here. Let's check in with our good friend Jim Roop, who is at the CNN desk in Los Angeles. Why, hello, sir, and how are you on this Monday?
Woo-hoo, great. Paris Hilton still in jail.
That's what I'm saying. Boy, I got to tell you, Friday, we were just talking about this, Friday was just the most insane, great, it was like that day that the O.J. chase happened, it was like the day that Michael Jackson didn't go to court, it was like the day we had some guy throw himself off the roof of a hotel here at the same, what else happened on that day? That day that the guy tossed himself off the roof of the Paramount, wasn't that the same day that something happened with Britney Spears? There was something else. There was like
She filed for divorce.
That was the same day that Britney Spears. We have this day that happened, I don't know, last year sometime, and we have announced that we have christened it the best day ever. Because, like, there was a milk truck that spilled like 1,000 gallons of milk. Britney Spears filed for divorce. A guy tossed himself off a hotel building like 3 blocks away from us. Something else happened. There was like 900 things that all happened at once. Friday felt a lot like that with the Paris thing just unfolding. And then what's his name? Your mayor is getting divorced, right?
Yeah, who cares about that?
Happened the same day. So what's the deal with Paris? So at this point, her street cred is so totally trashed and blown, she has no chance to look tough or hard. Why would she not appeal at this point?
You mean appeal the sentence?
Yeah.
It's not going to be repealed.
But, I mean, wouldn't she at least give it the old college try? She has nothing to lose.
I think she's trying. She's really trying to play the, I don't know how to say, the I'm all grown up type of card.
Too late.
You know?
Too late. That ship has sailed and
well,
been
I know.
Torpedoed.
And I think everybody agrees with you that it's too little, too late. And, you know, the stuff that she told Barbara Walters, that dumb act was all an act, and that it's not cute anymore, so she has to knock it off. I don't believe it's an act.
No.
You know, I believe she makes a lot of excuses. And she does, you know, play the blonde routine, but I don't know that it's a total act.
No, she seems relentlessly stupid.
Yeah.
She
doesn't cover herself well, which is why I think she's really stupid.
Yes. She is what Bruce Williams would call industrial strength. Stupid. Anyway, so she's there. And so what is it? It is now, what, in 38 days, 37 days, something like that?
You know, what is she into this, 3 days now?
Something like that, and then it was 40 to begin with, yeah.
Well, you know, the judge says she's going to have to serve 45. I would imagine with good behavior because, you know, when you turn yourself in, you'd get automatic credit anyway for about 8 days. So I think it's going to wind up being the 23. And she could still get out early because technically what happens is, and the sheriff has, he has a federal mandate to follow. He has to keep the real criminals in jail and the little piddly idiots out of jail. So what he did with Paris Hilton was kind of right. He said, look, you know, you'll serve 10% of your sentence, 2 or 3 days. You're out. Okay, go home, electronic bracelet, you know, I need the bed. But he knew he was going to take a lot of heat for it. So, you know, as much as I've blasted this guy over the years, you know, I got to give him props for that because he really... He really stuck his neck out trying to do something that he thought was right.
I think if he had just said, look, the jail's overcrowded, and, you know, she may be dumb and a drunk driver and whatever. She's probably not going to kill anybody, so we're going to let her go, and everybody's going to be okay with that. That'd be fine.
Yeah, that would have been great if he would have been up front of
it. He tried to mask it with his stupid, she has a medical condition that we can't. And as you know, Tom Likas made this observation. There's no medical condition she could have that other people at that jail don't already have and aren't being treated for.
Well, there are. There's like 96 people, I think, in the CTC. Where she is now, the Correctional Treatment Center, which is really, it's a licensed hospital in the jail, which is what it is.
Right.
And, you know, it costs a bunch of money to keep somebody in there. It costs about $100 for a prisoner to be held, a female prisoner to be held in regular system, and about $1,000 a day for somebody to be held in this CTC. So you got 96 people in there. That's $96,000 that the taxpayers are paying out to give somebody some sort of mental rest. Because they can't handle being incarcerated.
Now, is she going to stay in this mental ward the rest of her stay, or are they going to kick her back into the regular cell?
Well, I talked to the sheriff's department today, and they said the medical team will have to assess when she's stable. So there is something apparently there for which she's being treated, depression, whatever it is. And when she's stable and ready, they'll put her in the regular system because it costs a lot. And by the way, when you send someone home on house arrest, it doesn't cost anything to us.
Right.
You know, because they have to... You know, they have to buy their own food and all that stuff.
Oh, you know what? It's worth whatever we have to pay. And by we, I mean you.
you mean residents of Los Angeles County.
I was going to say, because I don't have to pay a dime. It doesn't matter to me. It's worth it, really. But you know what?
Wait till we work on getting her in federal lockup. Then it's going to cost you.
I'd be willing to pay it, though. Seriously. If they want to take an extra, like, 0.5% out of my next couple paychecks, I'm fine.
You should be able to designate, you know, I want $1 per week to go to the Paris Hilton incarceration.
It's like that thing on your fund. That thing on your income tax form that used to be that. I don't know if it's still there where it says, would you like to contribute $1 to reelect the president?
Oh, it's still there.
I want to have, like, do you want to contribute $1 to lock up celebrities and pelt them with garbage? Rick Emerson votes yes. He votes yes.
Well, here's the great thing. As we speak, the Reverend Al Sharpton is speaking with the sheriff of Los Angeles County. His concerns that Paris Hilton is
is receiving special treatment because a millionaire hip-hop artist would, of course, not have been released, as was Paris Hilton.
Yeah, well, you know, I just, the thing about Al Sharpton is, it's just, it causes me real cognitive dissonance, because from day to day, I can never tell whether I agree with him or disagree with him on something, and it's kind of, it gives me mental whiplash after a while, you know what I mean?
Well, even if you agree with him about something, you're ticked off because you know he's only in it for FaceTime.
Yeah, that's the thing. I realized, I guess what everybody else realized after Tawana Brawley, which is that the guy's just such a relentless mercenary about this.
Yeah.
Hey, did you watch The Sopranos last night?
Yes, I did.
And what are your thoughts? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
You know, I don't know. I'm still on the fence on it. I thought something went wrong with the cable.
See,
I started cussing at the television.
Exactly.
Woke my family up. What's the matter, Dad? You know? But I don't know. It left it open for a motion picture. It left it open for HBO to revive that series. It left a lot of things available. I thought the hit on What's-His-Name was pretty cool last night, and then the car rental.
Oh, yeah, when his head got crushed by the SUV. That
beautiful,
was pretty great.
Man.
Yeah. That was the only violence in the entire episode.
True.
The thing about them bringing it back for the series or for a motion picture, I think Gandolfini has basically said, like, F it, I'm done. I am out of here. Now, I suppose any amount of money, everybody can be bought, I guess. But Gandolfini, if you read the interview with him, he's just like, I am so done with being Tony Soprano. I get the feeling they're all kind of burned out on that show. So, you know, it remains to be seen whether they'll bring it back. If the whole thing was just a setup so they can do some sort of a movie, I'll feel really manipulated. I'll feel really used. So,
well, you know, 10 years of that kind of performance and that kind of storyline, it's exhausting.
No, it's true. I mean, it's, in a way, I'm glad that it's done. You know what I mean? I'm glad that it's over. And for selfish reasons, too, because, frankly, I know this sounds like a stupid American complaint, that, you know, this is a problem that people in Iraq would be glad to have. But, you know, that this stupid waiting for a year and a half between seasons and having to remember what the hell was going on. I'm just, in a way, I'm glad that it's done, so it's not a thing I have to worry about anymore. You know what I mean? It's done and it's finished and it's in the can, as they say.
And there's something also, there's some comforting factor in the fact that, they weren't whacked by that guy going to the bathroom like everybody thought.
Well, who knows? I mean, you know.
At least they didn't show it, if that was going to happen.
I mean, then there's a whole theory that, well, somebody blew up the diner, which is why everything went black, or, you know. And I got an email here from a medical person who's like, well, you know, even if Tony had been shot, it wouldn't have just gone to black, because you don't die instantly anyway, doctors say. And, you know, who knows? Who knows? It just feels like David Chase wrote himself into a corner, and it was just sort of a, and...
Go to black.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, and everybody kind of went, it's genius, you know? I mean, it just felt like it was just sort of a gag, like he was just goofing on us, and everybody just sort of reflexively has to call it brilliant, so...
The last thing we remember of Tony Soprano was popping an onion ring in his mouth.
Yeah, well, that is the ultimate Tony moment, I guess, though, in a way. That is that guy. All right, my friend, enjoy the rest of your Southern California day. We will have speaks with you very soon.
Thank you so much.
Now we should just end this show that way. We'll just go to black. Let's do that today, Sarah.
We're going to end the show in black?
We're going to end the show. I'm just going to end it in mid-sentence. You listening right now will know it's coming. People who just tune in after this moment. Can we get Journey Don't Stop Believing?
Mm-hmm.
Can you find that somewhere, please? All right. Today we're just going to end the show that way. If you're listening now, you'll feel a little bit smarter than everybody else because you heard us planning it on the air. All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, let's go to Jersey and see what fans of The Sopranos think about the program. Bob of New Jersey says he's not happy.
Bob of New Jersey.
He's not happy with the way the show ended.
I thought my TV went on a fritz. It blacked out. I was totally disappointed. The whole editing was choppy and everything, I think. It's like he ran out of ideas and didn't know which way to go.
That is my thing, is they did bounce from story arc to story arc. There were all of these scenes that lasted like 10 seconds. It really was like, I keep forgetting again, it's not telescoping, I guess it's compressing, except that's the opposite of expanding. What is the opposite? It's not microscoping, whatever. He was taking like a year's worth of crap and he was trying to get it all done in one episode, and, you know, it just felt like it was a patchwork of story arcs last night.
Bob said they should have asked him for a better ending for Tony Soprano.
Witness protection. You know, that would be a semi-happy ending, yet he wouldn't go on with his life of crime, so to speak.
That's Bob from New Jersey.
So to speak. All right.
More Paris Hilton news. After being released from jail for her so-called medical condition, Paris Hilton is back. Of course, word has it that the hotel heiress is borderline suicidal after spending 3 days in the county lockup.
Well, you know, you're either suicidal or you're not. Borderline suicidal is...
Go for it, girl.
Yes, that is the... By the way, that is the official opinion of CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Is it system or system?
System.
System. One is either suicidal or one is not. You're either actively attempting to kill yourself or you're not. There is no borderline suicidal. That's like saying you're borderline pregnant. You know? Just do it and be done with it or don't.
Criminal defense attorney David Wall says Hilton should have told the authorities she's on medication for her so-called mental disorder.
What happened, no doubt, was Paris went in there and quickly deteriorated as far as her mental condition went to the point where she probably figured, oops, I should have told them. Now I really do need my physician because the sheriff seemed to insinuate that she became suicidal, if not borderline suicidal.
Okay, well, just another hungry lawyer looking for attention.
Seriously, and I don't believe that either because
you are somebody.
If you go into jail, don't they get access to your medical records to find out?
Because, like, you know, if you have tuberculosis or AIDS or something, I mean, it seems like they want to know this. They don't want to rely on you. Do you have TB?
No.
It seems like they don't want to rely on just the honesty of felons to reveal whether or not you've got something that's going to kill everybody. So it seems like they would have access to your medication and your medical records. So I don't buy that she somehow forgot to tell them. I suspect that we will never really know the reason, that we'll never really know whatever this medical condition is. If it was something serious or whatever, it seems like we'll never really know it. But these are all what a court would call a transparent falsehood. It just seems like none of these make any sense. So,
WFAN is celebrating 20 years on the air, the station that started it all. They said it couldn't be done. It was one of the craziest ideas tried on the radio, but WFAN is celebrating its 20th anniversary on July 1st. Who's not mentioned in its history?
Don Imus.
Some of WFAN's original hosts were Greg Gumbel, Jim Lamprey, Art Shamsky, Howie Rose, Steve Summers, Pete Franklin.
I'm sure they'll mention Don Imus any moment now.
WFAN's history seems to end on April 2006 when they began an online streaming.
So there you go. Don Imus is now officially an un-person. Jesus, yeah.
Congratulations to WFA.
Yeah. Congratulations, WFA.
They said it couldn't be done.
Highest billing station in the country for the longest time. God knows that wasn't... Not like Don Imus and his $25 million a year billing on that station had anything to do with it. No. Glad to see he no longer matters. That's what's going to happen to us, you know. Someday, they're just going to go through with a pencil and just completely erase us from the history. God damn. Let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello there.
Hello there. How you doing, Rick?
What's up?
Oh, nothing. I'm just really,
thanks for calling.
Scotty, what is this screaming sound? He wants to talk about nothing.
Well, you see, now that's what you get without, you know, Scotty doesn't have to diddly squat, dude.
How can I help you, sir? He really had nothing to share.
No, so why not call here?
Fantastic. If you've got nothing to share, call 503-733-2970 right now. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, I have a request. Is there any way possible we could put out a call or a plea to all would-be criminals in the L.A. area, so just to cool it for like the next month or so, so there wouldn't be any pressure on the sheriff to let Paris out early?
Oh, I see. So to stem the overcrowding?
Yes.
Well, I'll do what I can. I'll ask Rook to ask a... I'll ask him to put out some sort of bullets into the assembled felonious throngs.
Let him know. Just a plea from all of us.
Did you hear the story we had earlier where they're afraid to let her go back to Linwood? Did we ever get an answer about that? Did Jim answer that and I just ignored it? About whether she's going back to Linwood or whether she's staying in the mental ward? Because the guys at the Linwood jail said that they're deathly afraid that she's going to be shanked in the mess hall if they let her back in there. So we got that to look forward to. All right, yeah, well, I'll put out the word, sir.
I would appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. One more. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, this is Michael.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
Hey, when they go into jail, you know, unless you take your records with you, they don't know anything about you. You know, and they're only taking you at your word.
Yeah, but
what's going on with you?
That doesn't make any sense, really, because it seems like that doesn't make any sense, because then if you got something that was lethal and contagious or very, very dangerous and contagious, you're relying on the word of a criminal to tell you.
Exactly. You know, because unless they can actually see it, you know, like say you got a broken arm, broken leg, or, you know, anything, you know, they're going to wait, and, you know, if it's really serious enough, they'll put you in medical area where they can keep a watch on you, you know.
Interesting.
But, yeah, I've been there, so I know.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day, buddy. Right, get you off.
All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
These are Scotty's leftover stories. Story number 10, Scotty.
Are these stories he did not get to on
these
Friday?
These are stories I did not get to.
All right, hold on a second. Let's.
They merit our attention.
All right, before we do anything else, Scotty, can you please?
Scotty J.
Can you please come to the studio? We would appreciate it. Scotty J, intrepid PA. Now he's wearing his I'm a Pepper shirt, which, by the way, was the same shirt that was worn by the guy in the wheelchair that got taken on a 4 mile ride by that semi the other day. Scotty J, our intrepid PA. Hello, sir.
Hello. How's it going?
How are you today?
Super, Rick.
Did you cut yourself shaving?
No, that's a, blemish.
A blemish.
Okay. It's a blight.
Yeah.
How do you feel your news went on Friday?
I thought it was just, it was just there.
Is it still in the system? I bet it is. What was it called, like A-Tim 1 or something?
Yeah.
Hey, Sarah, can you please be bringing it? I want to hear
that. I like A-Tim 2. It's got Paris on there, so A-Tim 2.
Which is your favorite?
A-Tim 2.
Bring up A-Tim 1.
I had the Paris News. ATM 1 didn't have any of that.
0 so. 1 or 1?
It's just ATM 1.
I also ATM had 1. Sarah on ATM 2.
Uh-huh. Oh, we'll listen to another one. Mm. Let's listen to ATM 1. This is.
And now, from the CBS Radio.
Scotty's News on Friday.
This is the news with Tim Ryan.
Howard Beale.
Hello again from the CBS News Center in downtown Portland. I'm Scotty J. and for Tim Riley. In a tradition as old as the festival goes,
nobody talks like that.
The microphone is the competition for CBS.
All right, I'm sorry. We should start this in the beginning and we'll be quiet. This is Scotty J's news from Friday. I'm sorry. We'll go ahead and let this play all the way through. This is Scotty J's news.
Yeah, it's not like background noise.
Yeah.
And now, from the CBS Radio Center in downtown Portland, this is the news with Tim Riley.
Hello again from the CBS News Center in downtown Portland. I'm Scotty J. and for Tim Riley. In a tradition as old as the Rose Festival Grand Floral Parade itself, the competition for seating space is especially tough this year for the 100th anniversary of Portland's biggest public event. In the past, parade goers usually marked their spots on Friday. They're now taping chairs and chalking sidewalks almost a week ahead of the 100th annual Rose Festival Grand Floral Parade. Parade begins at 10 a.m. tomorrow. A family of four in Michigan got a nasty surprise while driving in Indianapolis yesterday. A dump truck hauling 20 to 25-year-old processed human waste slammed on its brakes yesterday morning to avoid striking the family minivan, but the law of motion took its course. The waste flew out of the back of the uncovered truck and coated the van with a stinky mess. A British judge sentenced George Michael today to 100 hours of community service and banned him from driving for 2 years. The pop star was found slumped at the wheel of his end of October 2nd. Portland Metro forecast supposed to reach a high of 74, 53 low this evening. Scotty J in for Tim Riley at the CBS News Center. Now here's Doyle Redland and the Onion News Desk.
Very good, Scotty. You got a peculiar style of enunciation. You sort of slide into words like this.
Slur a lot of them.
Yes.
After many
years. I
thought
that was understandable.
The other thing is, I don't know what it is about that mic, but I was sitting there reading it like this.
Popping
and it sounds like it's,
The sound levels, it all sounds fine on the air. On the air, you can't even.
Oh, yeah.
It all evens out.
It's not really a studio in there.
No, you listen to Tim's news. It's not a reflection on Tim because it is the equipment in there. You listen to Tim's news here in the studio before it goes out over the air, and I swear to God, it's like sometimes it just it's like his levels just suddenly are so low you can't even hear him. On the air, it sounds fine.
Yeah.
So ignore it. You just have a, sometimes you'll slide into a word like this.
Tonight it's David Letterman.
Yeah, and then, but then other times you'll take a word like October and you'll go, October, and it's like someone has edited out weird slices of the word. Let me ask you this. Did you have a big goofy smile on your face the entire time you were recording that news? Were you recording it like this with a big smile on your face?
Well, he was enjoying himself.
A little bit, yeah.
Doing it right
you're
now.
You're supposed to.
They train you that way
in college.
I bet they were former DJs in the 1950s.
Put a picture of somebody that you...
Smile at a white person while you're reading.
Or they say, put a picture up on the wall and stare at that person. You're only talking to that one person, so...
Yeah.
Chances are you're not talking to anybody. Most
if I'm on, that's true.
That's been my experience. What was the average age of your professor?
Well, one of them, the main guy for like a year and a half, he must have been late 50s.
When is the last time he worked at a radio station? your professional medical.
He doesn't remember he had Alzheimer's.
And that would be 20 years prior.
Yeah. So the last time he worked in radio was in the 1980s. That totally explains why he wants you to smile when you say everything on the air. That's fantastic. We used to have, I mean, Tim had to do this, and I know I did too, where you literally, they would have a laminated photo of some white people, and they would stick it up on the, they would stick it up in front of your microphone, and that was who you had to speak to. Everything had to be directed to this incredibly lame white family. They probably still do that at Kink. That's just a guess, though.
Let's hear Scotty's second one.
Do we have a, this is ATM 2?
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is ATM 2. This is Scotty's
second.
This one's
better.
This is Scotty's new, do you use sound bites in this one? Or actualities, as they say?
Yes.
All right, this is Scotty's news from Friday, his second take at this.
And now, from the CBS Radio Center,
I love this opener.
Down Portland. This is the news with Tim Riley.
Good afternoon from the CBS News Center in downtown Portland. I'm Scotty J. and for Tim Riley. Saturday marks the 75th Greenwich Kennel Club Dog Show.
Greenwich?
It's billed as one of the oldest in the region. The show is being held this year at Taylor Farm Park in Norwalk. Show chairman Joy Brewster says they're expecting over 1,700 entries from over 100 different breeds. And now for some really big news. Socialite Paris Hilton was to appear in a Los Angeles courtroom today. She told officers that she would handle it by phone. They promptly went down and picked her up, bringing her back to court. Los Angeles County Supervisor Mike Antonovich.
Are you speaking backward? There are two people.
He called the decision pathetic and stupid to let Hilton use boiled bradyitis as a medical excuse to escape her full sentence. After the police escorted Hilton back into the court, we have this verdict.
Paris Hilton was just ordered back to jail. She left the courtroom in tears, screaming, "Mom, Mom, Mom."
An additional 35 days in jail. They're serving a plate of justice
like,
in Paris right
I'll wait,
now.
I'll wait.
Your Portland Metro forecast just ahead of another hour with Tom Likas, 74 degrees for the high, 53 low. Saturday,
53 low.
Expect 68 degrees with
low.
Rain late in the afternoon. I'm Scotty J. and for Tim Riley at the CBS News Center. Now here's
it's
Doyle
your name is all right. Thank
on
you.
News Desk.
It's good that your name is being relentlessly associated with this product, Tim. It's like you don't really, it's like you're some, like you're from Germany. And you're just reading the language phonetically, but you don't really know what you're saying.
It does sound like Clyde's thing, where you record yourself talking backward and then play it forward.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
It is like you voiced, or like, you know,
while you're watching Orbs.
Oh,
you know what? Excuse me.
Or like one of those old episodes of The Dukes of Hazzard, where they would record... You know, they would record somebody on the phone for 3 weeks, and then they would splice it all together and assemble the Duke boys talking about, you know, doing something illegal or whatever. It's like you assembled this out of words taken from other sentences.
It's almost 100% true, because that
in that last
story,
news bite we listened to, how many edits are in that last news?
Three
story?
Or four.
But oh, that's a lie.
Per sentence.
It's like you were punching in individual words.
It seems
that sounded
like
really
that.
Strange.
I think it is a microphone situation there. Next time I'll record in there.
That Tim just laughs. I'm like,
it's true, isn't it, Tim?
It's true.
When you listen back on it, it sounds like it's coming in.
Oh, that's just sad.
Okay. Secondly, that story was
to be part of these lies.
The Paris story was super long and it needed to be cut up to make the 90 seconds. So,
well, all stories are long and they all have to be cut up to 90 seconds. You do that beforehand.
I gave it the old college try.
The old
community
college
try from 13th grade. Here's funny in the
movie. Genius. Oh,
you know what, Scott? Well, the good part about this, Scotty, is these will
is
all...
Is that it's over?
These will all be lost within... No, let's not say that.
By tomorrow, these will be... No one will remember these. These will be gone.
Memory.
Yeah, they'll be distant memory. Mm. All right, we got a break.
Because we have an automatic washing machine that...
cleans the inside of the computer.
We're going to call in the cleaners.
I told the
like in the White House.
The board up guy that comes in here, I forgot his name.
Doesn't
I
matter.
Told him to take him out of there.
They're all interchangeable.
What did he smell of? Was it more of a Charleston shoe smell or more of a beef jerky smell?
A combination of both, I think.
Okay. Back after this, we got Peter Carlin coming up. Your phone calls later. More from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, right here on the Rick Emerson Show. We'll be right back. Rick Emerson radio program. I mean, wouldn't you be drinking as much as you possibly could?
I don't know.
Trying to numb the pain.
You're so weird.
I know. I'm just saying. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. All right. I'm assuming this is Peter Carlin. It's not labeled, Scotty. Is this Peter Carlin we have here on the line with us? Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show with a heart full of hate and a head full of cherry pie. It's Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Hello, sir.
Hi.
Hi, how are you, brother?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm dandy.
I'm fine. Do I sound cheerful and friendly?
No, but that's okay.
What? You know, you've got a strange... I don't know what to do. I don't know how much more cheerful and friendly I can be.
What do I need to do to please you?
Yeah, exactly.
No, here's the... I'm not... You know, here's the... That was weeks ago. I've become zen with the facts. And when I say zen, I don't mean that I'm just sort of placidly accepting it, although I guess that's what zen means, so maybe I'm looking for a different word. I guess what I'm saying is I have come to appreciate the fact, Peter Carlin,
yeah,
that when you appear on other radio shows, which I know you do... I know that when you go on those other radio shows, you must put on a cheerful facade. You must lie to them.
And I'm faking it with those guys.
You must fake it and pretend that you're a decent human being who likes interaction with others. But I know that when you come on this program, you are comfortable enough and we have a close enough bond that you can let down that facade and just be your normal, spiteful, hateful self.
It's like my shoes are off.
Exactly. I don't mean this in an Eddie Haskell kind of way. I am serious when I say that I do take that as a compliment, that you can be your curmudgeonly self here and we don't think less of you for it.
Sweet.
All right, so now I'm not going to tip...
Or can I just say lovingly, screw you. All right, go ahead. What's up? What do you want to talk about?
Well...
We're going to go right to the Sopranos, aren't we?
I was going
to
say, and I'm not going to tip my hand. I'm not going to tell you what I thought. I'm not going to indicate my feelings on it one way or the other. And if you haven't been listening, you won't know. So I'm going to ask you your assessment. Now, Sarah and I have been discussing, and I have already... predicted what your... And I purposely did not read your column today, although I'm sure it's brilliant, and I will read it later.
You know, a lot of people do that. They purposely don't read it pretty much every day.
I'm going to skip right over this and go to Margie Boulay. So I have deliberately not read your column because I don't want it to prejudice me here. I have made a prediction about your take on last night's Sopranos.
Which is?
Well, do you want me to tell you, or do you want to just say it?
And I
want to
hear his first.
Just say it, and then Sarah will be the arbiter of whether or not I guessed correctly.
Okay.
So go ahead. Your take on last night's Sopranos, Peter Carlin.
Well, I thought it was great. I loved it. I thought it was the most perfect ending they could have come up with, and not just because Phil Leotardo's head got squashed by an SUV.
That was very satisfying.
That was quite satisfying. But I mean, here's the thing: the show is about. People's inability to resolve anything. Get it? That's what has tied together virtually every single episode, this sort of pursuit that Tony has had this to try to resolve his emotional problems or to somehow, you know, find a way to reconcile his moral questing with the fact that he lives this essentially immoral or amoral life. And he's unable to do it and remains unable to do it. And I think, you know, as anyone who's been through therapy knows, you know, if you're in there for long enough, you know, eventually, I mean, yeah, you can resolve some stuff. I mean, you can make yourself feel better. But it's amazing how often it all comes down to the same stuff that you can never quite work your way through. And last night, I mean, you saw him getting right back. I mean, supposedly going to see AJ's therapist to deal with his desire to join the Army. Tony couldn't help talking about himself endlessly and getting back to his own problematic relationship with his mother.
Right.
You know, and so the fact that the show would end with that extraordinarily tense sequence in the cafe or the diner there, the roadside diner with the onion rings, where... virtually nothing happened, only every time anybody turned over and glanced at Tony, as a viewer, you and as the person at the center of the scene, he, you know, had to be convinced that this could be it. This next person is either going to hand, you know, that next hand is going to have a gun in it or a subpoena, you know, and that is his life. So this guy, and I don't know what people were looking for, you know, like a shootout or neat bows on every, you know, everything resolved and tied together neatly. But that's, you know, the show has never done that. In 85 previous episodes, that has never happened. And why they would want to begin with the final episode, I don't know. But to me, it's a much more literary and much more satisfying ending because now, you know, I mean, I don't know how many hours I'll be able to spend over the rest of my life sitting there wondering, well, what the hell, you know, where are they now? What could have possibly happened next? But, I mean, to me, it's that's a very satisfying way to end it.
Now, do you,
and you, sir, felt what?
Well, let me just say first and foremost that I was correct in my guess at your assessment of this. I did, and you can read whatever you want into this, but I will say that based upon just my talking with people, people here at work, reading the blogs that the kids keep these days, I will say that the people seemed kind of divided on last night's episode, whereas for whatever reason the critics almost have an almost unanimous take on last night's program, which is that it was genius. So I do sense that there is in this country kind of a divide over last night's episode about from the intelligentsia and the commoner about it. My thing is this, is that I don't expect everything to be tied up with a neat bow, because I don't think you could do that, and I think any attempt to do that would be forced or hollow or contrived, probably all three of those things. I do feel like, in retrospect, it just made so much of last night's episode sort of pointless time-killing.
Now, see, you douche, that is so wrong.
See, this is the open exchange that makes your appearances on this program fantastic. I just feel like, well, how many more goddamn hours do I have to spend listening to the whining AJ talk about whatever his stupid problem is?
But you see, you're not paying close enough attention because you got to a point where AJ had finally found the resolve to, you know, to follow this, and you know, he had found this kind of one size fits all solution for his own lack of direction, his fears about terrorism and everything, and that was to join the army and try to, you know, get a little discipline, try to get himself into officer training school, and you know, make the difference that he felt he needed to make. And there was that bit where, I mean, you could see him, you know, getting this resolve and this kind of steel in his spine. And there was that beautiful sequence where he was running up the road near their house, and it's like a winter morning. You could tell how harsh it was. You know, he was really wrapped up, and he was really moving up the street. And he was almost, I mean, if you remember the chubby little boy from a few years back,
right,
I mean, he was almost unrecognizable. But, you know, though clearly it's AJ. And his dad comes rolling up in the Escalade, and he rolls down the window, and he's singing the Rocky song to him, and then he says, what's his response? Get in!
Right.
You know, don't exercise, just jump in the car. You know, and that's what they did. They undermined him, you know. I mean, in their way of coddling him, they, you know, no, we'll set you up in, you know, this kind of crap job in this, you know, this terrible movie that Carmine's making, you know, and then if you do well here, we'll set you up in a club downtown. So it's like, you know, he gets, they essentially just keep him soft and keep him in the family.
You, what is your gut take on the finale? Is it that, I mean, obviously it can't be known, but what is your gut take on that final 10 seconds? Is it that Tony is whacked? Is it that I've heard that it's symbolic whacking of us, the viewer?
Oh, that's stupid. B, you mean just the blackout?
The actual nuts and bolts of the blackout, and does it signify someone's death, and if so, who?
It signifies the end of the show, and that life goes on.
So
camera goes off, but their lives continue.
Well, because there's been a lot of attention paid to the fact that earlier, talking with Bobby Bacala, and then I think earlier talking with Big Pussy at some point in the previous episodes, Tony has talked about, well, you never hear the end, it just goes black. It's all, you know, you don't hear the shot. Everything just goes to black. It's all quiet. Whatever.
Well, you know, I guess there's an infinite ways to, you know, where there's a variety of ways that you can interpret that. But to me, there was nobody near him. There was nobody, you know, he just saw. I think what it was capturing was just the anxiety and the nonstop fear and well-placed fear that was going to attend the rest of this guy's waking moment. Because the sharks were circling. I mean, it was like, you know, Carlo had flipped and was jabbering to the FBI. Paulie was not looking particularly satisfied. But, I mean, he's constantly, you know, he's just this misanthropic character who is always, you know, pissed off at Tony. despite that, you know, I serve at your pleasure, my liege, you know. I mean, it's like, come on, he didn't mean that.
Well, especially you saw that look in his eye where he was just said with such bitterness, just such
rancor.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And Tony's already been close to taking that guy out just on general principles.
So it's your take that the finale was simply meant to show us what every day in Tony's shoes is like, that it's just nonstop neuroses and paranoia.
That it's not, yeah, there's no end. I mean, you may end up being able to, I mean, because if Phil's guys were so easily swayed, I mean, everybody, you know, there's such an absence of moral fiber with these guys, and that's the point. And the the real point of the show is that, you know what, these guys are, in many ways, us, because if you look at, you know, there are so many different little cultural hints that are, you know, little things that it drops, just little random moments on the TV screen and things that people, you know, like with AJ and Rihanna and watching that goofy Bush video on TV and giggling away. You know, I mean, there's a lot, there's an absence of discipline and self-sacrifice that goes beyond these guys. You know, they're sort of a much darker projection of, you know, you could argue, a larger cultural phenomenon.
It's
just, you know, it's the dissolution and the fraying of the American cultural, you know, or moral fiber.
It seems like David Chase and Gandolfini especially are just so burnt out on this and so over it. And I know that Gandolfini has said repeatedly, he's just like, I'm done with it. I'm so done with being Tony Soprano. I'm ready to move on. I don't do it anymore. There's speculation, but is there any evidence at all that these guys will come back and do like a follow-up? Because I got to tell you, I will feel so jacked if this is just a setup to get me to shill, you know, to spend money, you know, for some movie. Some Sopranos film that they do.
Well, but you know, I mean, to me, it's like, I think if David Chase proved anything with this, it's that, you know, he doesn't care about satisfying the audience, you know, in that kind of traditional put on a show way. He's telling a story that means something to him, that encapsulates something that he feels, you know, that obviously he feels very strongly about. And if at some point he wakes up and decides that, you know, he's got another story to tell with these characters and maybe it would work better as a film, you know, to extend it or whatever, then, you know, I'm willing to follow him. I'm willing to plunk down my $9 or whatever and go see that movie. You know, I mean, but it's like, because he sort of won my trust. I mean, particularly with this, I mean, a long time ago in the course of this show, but I mean, I think he emphasized that this time around. You know, he's really not going to cop to the traditional Hollywood, you know, way of doing business. He's got his own vision and his own stories that he wants to tell his own way, and that's what he's doing.
Do you feel like, because here's my thing, even if I buy the non-resolution of this episode, it was making some larger point, or it was to indicate Tony's frame of mind, or the universe and the mindset in which he lives. In other words, if it's not about the destination, if it is about the journey, do you feel like this last season and a half, basically ever since the Vito storyline was resolved, do you feel like the journey has been strong enough to bear rewatching?
Yeah, totally. I've rewatched a bunch of these. I've seen most of these episodes of season twice, and there's just layers of information and layers of stories being told and details and little hints that get dropped here and there, which are really, you know, that you pick up the second or, you know, third time around, that I think add a lot of depth to the story.
I saw somebody did note that the flip on the jukebox where Tony was sitting, there was, you know, he was listening to Don't Stop Believin', and that the other song listed right there, and that when they do that tight frame of the jukebox is Any Way You Want It. And so somebody noted that that had the, you know, it's that thing where people are going back, ever since Lost, people are going back every single frame by frame.
Yeah.
Somebody also.
Well, I was listening when he first walked in. The tune that was playing was "Little Feet, All That You Dream."
Really?
Yeah.
Well, somebody else noted, and I haven't heard any confirmation of this. We had somebody else claim that everybody, all of the ancillary characters in the diner, are small characters from previous episodes who had been done wrong by Tony or his crew. And I don't know if that's just a bunch of crap or if that's...
Well, that's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, I haven't heard it confirmed by anybody else either.
This crazy lady, Nikki Pink, who writes for the LA Weekly, wrote this just outrageously stupid blog thing where she was, like, went on this... And she's, like, this total inside... industry insider type, you know, who's always like first on her blog with like the latest deal and about what, you know, blah blah blah. But you know, she wandered off into aesthetic criticism, inspired by the end of The Sopranos, and proposed that you know, David Chase was just something like, you know, throwing it in the face of his fans and said, I think literally this is a quote, like crapped in the face of America.
I did read that. I read that last night. That was it's that Deadline Hollywood.
Yeah.
I read that piece.
What a nut! I mean, and talk about somebody with absolutely no, I mean, critical facility. I mean, other than the lovely image of David Chase taking a crap in the face of America.
I mean, it's not like it's without precedent for an artist to do something to deliberately irritate or alienate their fans. I mean, that certainly has precedent.
But I would not. I would in no way say that this fell in that tradition. I mean, it just followed in the tradition that The Sopranos had long since set up, which was, you know, no season-ending things have been thoroughly climactic. I mean, it's always the penultimate episode where, you know, the big stuff
that
happens.
That is true. It, almost every season, you're right, where it's the second-to-last episode where the big bloodbath or the big whatever, because I thought last week's episode felt much more like a traditional Sopranos story. And then, of course, the finale, if you go all the way back to the first season, where the first season finale was basically them just eating at Artie's restaurant or whatever. Mm-hmm. So,
but, you know, this thing, I mean, to me, it comes down to, you know, the Pine Barrens episode and the Russian. And people who kept insisting, and to this day, probably to this moment, someone somewhere is keening and wailing because whatever happened to the Russian who seemed to get shot in the head and still sprinted off into the you know, the snowy wastelands. And it's like, guess what? You know, he doesn't matter. What mattered was Polly and Christopher wandering around, you know, in this kind of frigid wasteland of their own souls, and he was just the device that led them there. And the fact that he was kind of a wraith is just sort of a cool bit of detail.
And
in that same way, it's like, oh my God, you know, there was no conclusion for Tony. Well, yes, there was. It was him in his own personal hell, you know, on the verge of three different kinds of disaster because he doesn't have the moral fiber to live a decent life.
I will say this. I did take a perverse kind of pleasure, and maybe this is emblematic of the whole episode, in that they didn't bring Melfi back for some other appearance. And she kicked him out of therapy, and that was it. I did like that they didn't feel compelled to have some resolution of that beyond what we had last week.
I was wondering whether he was going to end up going to see his new shrink, you know, Elliot Kupferberg.
Right. Oh, yeah. That
because he had such a fetish for Tony.
Just to jump the topics here real quickly, because I know you got things to do and places to go and people to irritate. So let's talk about another season finale, which is The Shield.
Mm.
And I will say this, at the risk of sort of repeating myself, I will say that I was a little let down by The Shield finale. Only
did it crap in your face?
No, it was just sort of a mild flatulence. I thought that The Shield finale was actually really good. I liked the interplay between Claudette and Hyatt, the new guy, where she sort of wants somebody who is unthinkingly loyal to her, and when he shows any signs of not being exactly what she wants, she boots him. I do like the uneasy alliance between Vic Mackey and David Aceveda, which all comes down to that hideous photograph that got taken of Aceveda a few years ago.
Yeah.
The point when they sort of, I won't say they lost me, because that show was so close to flawless most of the time, but the one serious misstep was this sort of deus ex machina of the at the end, where it was like the trunk full of like incriminating evidence on every single, like, you know, there was like secret JFK files and, you know, and Roswell photographs or whatever in the trunk. I will say that seemed to be stretching a bit, that they would somehow pull over this one car and in the trunk is like photographs, you know, of like every inconceivable bit of blackmail you could possibly imagine.
Well, you know something, I had another friend of mine who was emailing me complaining about like how all these things could be happening at the same time. And my thing to him was, you know what? I mean, what if I was writing a script about a, you know, presidential administration and you know, and this Republican Party, which at precisely the same time that, you know, they're, one of their big lobbyists is going down in seven different kinds of scandal, that, you know, this other congressman in Florida has been secretly, you know, molesting pages for years, and everybody knows about it, while this other congressman in California is taking these enormous bribes while the attorney general is up to... It's like, you know what? It's like... See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See where I'm going with
this? No, I understand. Or you could draw a Watergate parallel as well, that if you'd scripted out Watergate in the film, nobody would possibly believe that, you know, that the president would have boxes and boxes of tapes showing his own misdeeds.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Are you kidding? That's ludicrous. No one in their right mind would ever do that.
But yeah, so I mean, it felt a little like, you know, just kind of fell in by the hand of God. But at the same token, I'm so willing to overlook it because that show has been so strong. And I mean, I really do feel like they're going into this home stretch that is going to end very well. I have a good feeling in my soul about next year's.
The fact that Shane would at the last moment find his little scrap of humanity, that the depth of hate that he felt for Vic was not so overwhelming. It hadn't, you know, he was not totally evil. He knew he had to protect Vic's family because they were not responsible.
That sequence where he was sticking Corinne and Cassidy in that boxcar, though, was just unbelievably intense. I mean, that show can give me high blood pressure sometimes. I really believe that. That whole Kavanaugh story arc, I mean, I think that thing gave me peptic ulcers. So, I mean, I really am looking forward to them resolving this in strong style. So, all right, well, we've taken like 9 hours of your time. Is there anything else good this week that we ought to care about?
There's this Monterey Pop 40th anniversary special coming up, which I haven't seen yet, but it's on my desk. I'm about to see it. And there's something, an animated thing on Comedy Central on Wednesday night called Lil Bush, which is one of those.
Remind me never to watch that.
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to, like, take a look and see. It might be funny. It might suck. But you know what is really cool to watch? Somebody turned me on to this. Luciano Lopez, our pop music critic, turned me on to this over the weekend. This thing on, go to the internet, it's at clarkandmichael.com. Michael Cera, who was...
Right, yeah.
Remember George Michael from Arrested Development?
Yeah.
He and his buddy are doing these webisodes where they play these aspiring young screenwriters, and it's pretty hysterical.
I read an interview with him where he came up like a pretty sharp kid.
And he's great on this.
All right, what is it called? Clarkandmichael.com?
Yeah.
Clarkandmichael.com.
Check it out. It rocks.
I will do that. All right, check it out. And also, check out Peter Carlin because he, in fact, rocks himself. That was a ham-handed segue. I'm sorry. I'm better than that. All right.
You know what? I actually am not sure that you are, but...
And that's why we love you, Peter, because you and I have that kind of honesty.
Yeah.
All right, read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. He wishes that you would all go to hell. He's Peter Carlin, kids. Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you so much. By the way, how much was that the classic Peter Carlin interview with? Well, it's about Paulie and Christopher wandering in the frozen wasteland of their own souls. That's Peter Carlin right there in a nutshell. That one he told me to F myself. Back after this, Tim Riley, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. This email says, I heart Peter Carlin. He is consistently one of the best guests on your program. I'll put that right next to the many, many dozens of emails from people who dislike him with the white-hot intensity of a supernova. It's all part of the vast panoply of opinions here at the Rick Emerson Show. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let's pay a final visit for now to the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Appeared on the Monday Morning Joe program on MSNBC and blasted Katie Couric for dumbing down and tarting up the news.
Tarting it up. That's what he said.
Really?
Hi, I'm 80.
He also talked about the coverage of Paris Hilton.
So he said MSNBC was the worst offender. And I can barely talk because I have all the smoggy stuff in my throat.
You have the residual L.A. smog throat.
All right. Yeah. Here's another Scotty leftover story. Just to make him feel better because he put all this together. Let's see. Officials in Punta Gorda, Florida are scratching their heads and trying to figure out what some teens are doing with a frozen alligator. Charlotte, Florida deputies thought they were investigating a simple burglary when they arrested four teens for stealing aluminum to sell for scrap. However, a search of the suspect's home uncovered a dozen 3-foot gators and a stolen rifle. Law enforcement officials are investigating the criminal issues while Florida Fish and Wildlife had the gator body. Okay, Scotty, thank you.
I like the dismissive sort of into the shredder it goes. We ought to get a shredder in here, so when we find news stories that displease us or that we find unworthy, we can just shred them on the air.
Fantastic. And I had a Robert Conrad story here, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Earlier. I lost
find a
it.
Robert Wagner story to go with that, too?
Just a Robert Conrad story. Apparently, he is done with his probation after hitting someone... driving while intoxicated.
Robert, when did that even happen?
It happened a couple of years ago.
You know, here's the
here it is. I found it.
Robert Conrad has been given an early release from probation. He was serving as part of his sentence for a drunk driving crash in 2003. He covered 6 months of house arrest, so he got house arrest. But there's no Paris Hilton. As a result, the head-on crash, his victim suffered a broken leg and wrist. And Conrad remains partially paralyzed. He's 72. And was known for the Wild Wild West, also for Black Sheep Squadron, which I thought was a good show.
And also, and to me, he is always G. Gordon Liddy, because he played G. Gordon Liddy in the movie adaptation of the book Will. And so that's the last thing I remember him really being prominent in. Rick, about last night's Sopranos. It's not the destination. It's all about the journey. Ha, 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 they type out. Signed, David Chase can go pound it. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, okay. Well, I think that's it for now, because my voice is about...
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll see you all tomorrow as soon as I recover.
Greatest newsman in the history of the world, Tim Riley.
Thank you very much.
Back at 4, 5, 6, and 7 o'clock in his rightful place today, back at the Anchoring the News.
Well, that's right. I do have to get better, don't I?
Yes, because you have to be on in an hour and 15 minutes.
All right, well, I'll start doing something about that.
You have to be ready to go live at 4.
Gargle with hot water.
Top of the hour. Live news all the way through Lycus. All right. So, let's see. What are we doing? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick.
Yes.
You know, there's no doubt they fired you guys. What are we going to talk about tomorrow? Days of Our Lives for 4 hours? Sopranos, come on.
Yes. Why would we possibly talk about the Sopranos? Is that all you had, sir?
This is a show for men. I turned my whole shop on you. I spread the word. I get to the shop today, they're all mad at me. They think if Big Pussy ain't on the Sopranos, they think Big Pussy's on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hold on. Let me understand this now. Since you've clearly used your best material as the opening sentence here, are you telling me that The Sopranos is not a show for men?
I've never seen it. Don't watch this stuff. Why don't we talk about Everybody Loves Raymond? Let's talk about Cartoon Network. For God's sake, it's a radio program. Let's spread the news.
What a douchebag.
Thanks so much.
Why don't you talk about Uncle Milty?
Was that manly enough for you there, buddy?
Seriously.
Sure, Dumont Edward Folsom is coming.
Everybody Loves Raymond?
Yeah, seriously. Yes, why would I possibly talk? Why would I possibly talk about
men?
The Sopranos? All right. You know, I thought he was going to be amusing. Because he said that blah, 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 as the world turns, and then it all just went to hell. He led with his right, as they say in the boxing world, and it all disintegrated after that. All right, sir.
I don't understand what group of men would be mad about you talking about The Sopranos. Now, granted, you talked about it way too long.
Well, but what are you going to do?
But it's a
serious finale.
And we don't ever have to talk about it again.
As I'm saying, after this, I can never, and until they do the inevitable feature film, I got nothing. So this is the last time we're ever going to talk about it. Talk about it all day long. I should talk about it for 4 more hours tomorrow, just for that guy. All right. Rick, this email says, would you really even happy no matter what ending they chose? If Tony got whacked, you'd be disappointed. If he lived, you'd be disappointed.
This is what I said to you this morning.
But see, I disagree. It's not about... Look, I'm not saying he has to live. I'm not saying he has to die. I'm saying I understand that you can't wrap up everything. But I do feel like if I'm going to invest 9 years into a television show, I do feel like you got to at least try to wrap up something. That's my thing. I don't expect it to be all artificially resolved with a big bow, as everybody says. That's not what I'm asking for. But I do feel like on most programs, I do feel they try to leave you with some kind of destination that you've arrived at, where something has happened, something has changed, something has been resolved. Not all things, but I do believe something should be resolved. And there was just none of that last night. I do feel like, here's the thing. If I felt like it was some big statement on the behalf of David Chase, if I felt like they were trying to make some point with it, that'd be fine. But I really, and again, I don't really have any way of knowing. This is just my gut feeling. My gut feeling from watching last night is just that David Chase was burned out and out of ideas, frustrated with writing for the show, and didn't know where to go, and that seemed like a good way out. It seemed like, dare I say it, an easy way out. That's where I feel like, again, granted, I don't know. It's not like, and nobody knows but David Chase from whence that derives. Maybe he wrote it that way because he really did feel like it was some artistic decision that came from deep within him. Maybe that's the case. To me, it felt like a cop-out. It felt like a guy who had exhausted his creative energy and just needed to get to the end, and he was just so tired. Like, you hear about those guys that are mountain climbers or those guys who are marathon runners, and they talk about how, you know, you get within... you know, you get 80% of the way up Mount Everest, or you get 75% of the way through the marathon, and you don't care about it, you don't, it's no longer painful, it's no longer pleasurable, if you just want it to be done. And I felt like that's what I was feeling all the way through last night's episode, when they have those cutaways to scenes that literally would last like 12 seconds, and they'd move on to something else. I felt like he was just on this death march to get the series over with, because I know he tried to quit a couple years ago, and so did Gandolfini. They both tried to quit the show before, and HBO basically had to threaten or bribe them to come back. So my feeling was it was a guy who had exhausted himself and just wanted to get it over with. And rather than turn the reins over to somebody else, he insisted on working on the show, but at the same time had no stories left to tell and just sort of pumped it at the end. That's my only thing. And by the way, anybody who knows me knows I love downbeat endings. It would have made me really happy to see everybody just shot on the head. Because that's the perfect Rick Emerson ending to any television show or any movie. That's
yeah,
it,
but
man.
See, that would have been kind of predictable. This one at least was unpredictable.
I suppose, but I guess, I mean... And
did
I know
you
that
expect that to happen? Did you expect nothing to happen?
I don't know what I expected, actually. I mean, I really don't know. And I know that it seems like we're having a disproportionate amount of irritation or whatever about it, but you know what? That's what this show is. It's a disproportionate... It's spending 4 hours talking about 5 minutes of a television show. That really is this show to a T. I will just finally say this, though, that, you know, the perfect Rick Emerson ending, it's, you know, it's like that Glengarry Glenn Ross ending and that Seven ending, where it's 2 hours of depression, and then at the end, everyone gets cancer and dies. You know, and then the house gets bulldozed, and then little Jimmy's, you know, and then little Jimmy's dog runs away. That's the perfect ending to anything that I watch. Let's see. All right. Rick, was that guy who was upset about you talking about The Sopranos the same guy who was the advisor to your national show? Ha ha. Signed, Bigger Than Jesus callback. Well done, sir. Well spotted. If you remember, that was in Bigger Than Jesus, actually, based on a real conversation that I had with the guy who was syndicating my national show, or I completely forgot about that. He did actually call me one day and lecture me about talking about The Sopranos and inform me that, quote, no one cares about The Sopranos. Why would you possibly talk about that? All right.
I can't believe, you know what, I can respect him with the, you know, nobody cares about The Sopranos, and then backing it up by saying, talk about everybody loves Raymond.
Which has been off the air for 2 years. What are we doing here? Let me just get these and then we'll come back. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Love your show.
Thank you. I've never
seen The Sopranos, but it makes me want to go out and rent all the DVDs to watch the whole thing. And you stole my thunder just a minute ago. The guy, your previous caller, everybody loves Raymond's been off the air for 2 years.
Yeah, that guy was a douche. He didn't really even think. Even as a hate call, he didn't really think it all the way through. It kind of failed even as a complaint.
Love the show.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I really would recommend. We got to go to a break here. We'll come back and we'll wrap it up. We got maybe one more call around the corner. I really would say that you should go back and watch the entire run of The Sopranos, just because it is an important part of American pop culture. And plus, if you see it, then you can bitch about it. You know what I mean? It really gives you a license to complain about it all day long. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Saddest part of the broadcast today. Final segment of the Rick Emerson Show coming up tomorrow. Dennis Spitzenbarger joins us on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick, it's really a shame that The Sopranos are gone, because he's the only guy that can ever get you your money from those deadbeats.
It really is true, yes.
That is the way advertising works. These guys, that's why Sopranos exist.
Yes.
And that's why we love them.
It is true. Yes, well, though Sandy Barr's dead, so there's no getting blood from a corpse, or whatever that phrase is.
No, but there are guys in Spokane.
It's true. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
All right, there you go. All right, we're going to next see our radio correspondents, Lisa Goddard, James Roop, and Steve Kastenbaum, also Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. God love him. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it's Tim Riley. God bless him. Our PA is Scotty J. And, of course, the gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. As always, my friends, don't let the bastards grind you down and do try to help the retarded. I raised $30 for Special Olympics today. What did you do? Like is next. Dynamite at 7. We'll see y'all tomorrow right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I said.
Yeah, you cut that a little too short, my friend.
Trying to be too clever. And this is
joke works so much better in post. In post, after I've edited this down and made it work flawlessly. All right, bye now.
I'll see you.